I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not. Call
1-800-FURNACE. HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. A 3-1 lead wasn't enough for the Blue Jackets last night in Edmonton. CBJ took that lead into the third period Monday against the Oilers, but a pair of goals from Connor McDavid and an equalizer from Jake Walman sent the game into overtime 4-4. Less than 1 minute into the OT period, former Blue Jacket Jack Roslovic netted the game winner to hand Columbus the 5-4 loss. It's their fourth in a row. CBJ will wrap a 5-game road trip tonight in Seattle. In the NFL Monday, the Eagles beat the Packers 10-7 in Green Bay. The game was scoreless at half. That's the first time since that's happened since 2009. Week 11 begins Thursday in New England. The Patriots host the Jets. In college football, number one Ohio State hosts UCLA this Saturday night at 7:30. Buckeyes are 31.5-point favorites. OSU's head coach Ryan Day will speak this morning at 11, and we'll carry those comments live on The Fan. This update sponsored by Whiskey War by High Bank Distillery. Drink local. Drink High Bank.
Your morning just got more interesting.
Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure.
Bo Bishop,
a local sports media legend.
What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football.
A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach.
He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then it's a rundown. And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging,
and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist.
Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser.
Act accordingly.
You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Tuesday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. A little different program today than you're normally used to on a Tuesday, because at 11 o'clock, we have the Ryan Day press conference. This is typically a noon operation on a Tuesday, but for whatever reason, it's up an hour. And so that will go at 11 o'clock, and we will have that for you and carry it for you live. So that means a lot of things are moved around. Really looking forward to 9:30. Amanda Kristovich, our good buddy, she's with Front Office Sports. She's been all over the private equity play that the Big Ten's trying to make and some of the grumbling behind the scenes about the transparency that might be not there in regard to that. So she'll join us with 9:30 on that. 9:45, the Real Truth moves to there. 10 o'clock is your NFL Blitz. And then at 10:30, Uncle Dommy stops by on a Happy Veterans Day edition of the program. Had a ton of family, of my family who served. I know you guys have as well. So just very thankful and appreciative of those who have served and continue to protect our freedoms even today here and, of course, abroad as well. Full respect to all of those guys. I got to tell you guys, this daylight savings time is killing me. I find that, I don't know if it's the combination of the cold, my hunch is it's a combination of the cold snap and the daylight savings. I get that reverting, this is standard time, I guess, right? I guess we're reverted back to that. I feel like everything after 5 o'clock is 8:30. It all feels like 8:30 to me. And by 10 o'clock at night, I am done, gassed. And you'd say, well, that's great. You're getting an extra hour of sleep, but I'm not. I'm now find myself wide awake at 5 a.m. So my old sleep pattern was 11 to 6 was the old sleep pattern. Now I haven't gone on clock. So I find myself wide awake at 5 a.m. twiddling my thumbs at this point. And it's over a week. I've never had it last this long. I think the cold has something to do with it. I've never been this affected by a switch before, ever. And so are you still having it? Are you having that at all? Or have you adjusted?
I'd like to think I've adjusted, but I guess we'll have to ask the audience, because I think it's very much like you can hear it in the performance. And I think we're all good. Like, I do think, like, everybody has done a good job of trying to navigate this, because not only is it the clock switching, but we got the cold weather in the form of a face punch Sunday into Monday. And then I think, Saturday kickoff, it's going to be like 57 degrees in old Columbus town.
Thank God.
So I think all of this is just doing us not a solid.
Yeah, I got out of basketball practice last night, and the temperature in my car read 26 degrees, and I just said, not ready. Just not ready for that at 9:30 at night. Bake, how are you adjusting?
I think I'm fine. Like, I've had such crazy schedules my whole life that the hardest thing starting doing this show last year, we're almost a year into this with the three of us, the hardest thing for me was adjusting to having a schedule. Because my life for so long has been unscheduled that I don't think any of this stuff ever bothers me. The weather in Ohio is always so crazy that it never bothered. I feel like nothing bothers me. I just am big, dumb, and stupid and put my head down and plow through walls. So
What was my favorite schedule in my life was college. After my freshman year, I kind of got it figured out, and I was able to navigate college without ever having a class in the single digits. So the earliest class I ever had was 10:10. And that was, there was a stretch there where it was pretty good. And then when I was on local news, I was essentially a vampire, which was kind of good too. I was up till 2:30 every night. People would say, why don't you go to bed when you get home at like midnight? And I'm like, well, if you got off work at 5, are you going lights out at 6? You got to unwind a little bit. So you end up being up until 2:30 every single night. That was my life for, 15 years, 16 years like that.
Plus, there's also an adrenaline rush. Like, I know used to it over time, but on Fridays in the fall, like, Lee and I will go have our post-show meeting, as I do air quotes, after the show, because you're not going to sleep when you get home anyway after that, so...
No. You're flying high no matter what. So it caught me last night. Blue Jackets started later, and I got home from basketball around 9:20, and I watched a little of the Jackets game and started well enough, and we're up 3-1 when I couldn't go any longer. At that point, it was like, okay, we're exhausted. We're going to sleep. And then I think Connor McDavid pulled a Brick Tamblyn and may have killed a guy with a trident. And it might have been Matejchuk, and he put him in a blender.
I had a question real quick about Canadians, because it feels like this is the second game in a row that the game is scheduled 9:30 and you don't hear Canada till 9:45, 9:50. I mean, this would have been 8:45, 8:50 then.
8:45, 8:50. Yeah, I missed that because I wasn't home yet. So they delayed
didn't
happen.
So I believe the last game, they had some kind of pregame ceremony honoring somebody. So I think that's what it was. I think last night it was because it was the national broadcast on Canada. But they have to do like some kind of pregame or whatnot. I'm not totally sure with that.
It's on Amazon Prime, right?
Yeah,
in Canada. Yeah.
So I think they had some extra TV coverage. By the way, Bo.
Yeah.
How was that goal that Connor McDavid scored, number 3 on SportsCenter's top 10?
So I'd like to know the two better.
Yeah. What's better than that?
It was like the equivalent of like when Allen Iverson would do the crossover and you'd fall down. I mean, it was kind of like that. And then he went and scored, and they ended up winning.
Was there a buzzer beater in the NBA last night?
I don't care. It wasn't better than that.
And then something in the NFL they probably did. I know, but it's agenda setting.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know that there's anything better than it. We're probably should be fortunate as folks who have an NHL team in town that they had it as high as 3, and they probably only had it as high as 3 is because now they're in business with the NHL. I'm guessing that in the old, like 5 years ago, it probably wouldn't even have made the top 10 because it would have been played on Pluto. So Jackets haven't won in a minute. They get a point because we get to overtime, but they haven't won now. What is it? 4 in a row, 5 in a row, Bake?
I think that's 4. They won 4 straight and now they've lost 4 straight.
Yeah. It's tough to dig out of those holes. And obviously they're at the bottom of the Metro as we stand right now.
So you saw it coming. You could tell by the way they played because the Jackets basically went into prevent defense mode and McDavid just kicked it up another notch. And it's the one thing that the Jackets for some reason haven't gotten there yet, that when other teams push, they can't push back. I don't know if that was a coaching thing last night with them or it was just these young, but you could just see McDavid all of a sudden. And I mean, McDavid's a cheat code anyway.
Yeah, there's another.
But all level. Of a sudden that cheat code went to like, I don't know what the level would be, but it was just ridiculous.
Yeah, he ends up bearing two in the game, and they win 5-4 in overtime. So they're at Seattle tonight?
Correct.
At Seattle tonight. So that's a lot going on, and that's putting a lot of extra stress on a road trip to do all the – I said that yesterday. It's a 12-hour drive to Vancouver, so Seattle add another hour and a half, and that's the drive. So you're flying, but that's still – probably a 3.5-4 hour flight last night, and then you get into Seattle, and then you go to bed, and now you're going to play another game. So, look, they get paid very well to do this, but it's kind of weird what they did with the Western Canada and then Seattle road trip this year. Normally, they have it much more geographically aligned than it was. In terms of where we sit with the Buckeyes today, you know they're going to play 7:30 on Saturday night. That game is against UCLA. They are currently a 31.5-point favorites. After this one. I really thought this would be 24.5, but I think them losing to a true freshman quarterback at home, maybe that clinched it to get it all the way into the 30s. They host Rutgers next week, and that one's going to be in a similar vein. I mean, that'll be 28.5, something like that for Rutgers here next week. We still don't have a kick time for that one?
No, so that's expected to, they're going to take the full, they're going to take advantage of the 6-day window. So late Saturday, early Sunday morning, for the kick time for Rutgers and Ohio State next week.
They did say it will not be a night game. It is either going to fall in the noon, 3:30, or 4 o'clock window.
Screams 3:30.
So what would be the Big Ten options that week? Is there anything good in the league that week? There's got to be like a USC
Oregon. USC, like I think, is that week.
Yeah, but they can't play noon.
That's going to be your night game.
That's your nighty.
Okay, so that'll be USC Oregon will be NBC primetime, 3:30. I mean, good Lord. If you're Big Noon, you're probably doing, I mean, good Lord, guys, this could be Big Noon. It's not, I mean, it's a 30-point game, but it could be Big Noon. I mean, they're chasing ratings. Your other option is Nebraska at Penn State. Penn State is currently 0-6 in the league. Nebraska's playing a true freshman quarterback. You can't play Washington UCLA at Big Noon. You're not going to do Michigan State, Iowa at Big Noon, so that leaves you Michigan and Maryland, or Rutgers and Ohio State as Big Noon. None of the rest of this is going to be up to snuff.
Now, could they go, because they can do Big 12 Big Noon too, correct?
I'm pulling it up.
You could go BYU, Cincinnati.
You're going to take Ohio State over that.
Utah, Kansas State's your other option.
That one's decent. Kansas State stinks. I forgot they're 4-5. They're down this year. No, TCU Houston's a decent game, but that's not a Raider. Buckeyes are going to be Big Noon, kids. They're going to be Big Noon against Rutgers. That'd be my bet. As we sit here a few days before it's decided. One other thing I want to give props to. A great many local regional whiskey outfits have come to me over the last 10 years plus and wanted me to endorse them. And I would say, I'm open. Send me the whiskey. And if it's great, we'll do it. And many of the sales folks have, and many of them, I said, no, not quite there, not there. And then High Bank sent me Whiskey War, and I went, yeah, this is it. And then I met Adam and I met the folks there, and I said, these guys are artisans. They are absolutely locked into what they do, their craft, their passion. They're just the best at what they do. And then that was kind of backed up because they won Best Blended Whiskey in America 3 years in a row at the San Francisco World Spirits Competition, which is the most prestigious spirits competition in the world. So you say, okay, well, pretty good palate that you have, and that feels good, that something you think is really good, the world thinks is really good too. They had themselves a day yesterday. So I've said this many, many times. I don't often drink vodka, but when I do, after I tried theirs, it's the only one that I drink if I have a martini or something like that. And the blonde every once in a while, like a dirty martini. And so one day I just swapped it with Tito's and I just tried. I said, just give this a shot. And she's like, wow, this is clean. And that's the best way I would say it used to describe it. Yesterday, High Bank Vodka won best vodka in the world. This is in town, guys. This is in town.
Take that, Russia.
Right around the corner from where we are at this moment.
That's right. Yeah. Three locations. This is in town. This level of excellence is absurd. So to everybody there, congratulations. Deepest congratulations. A massive, massive accomplishment for those guys, and so proud to be associated and partners and all of it. It's just awesome. So great job. An incredible win. I don't know if it was a good game last night. It was tense. Wasn't necessarily aesthetically pleasing, which goes to a bigger question. Has the NFL ever been this wide open? We'll get to it coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We know everything about you. We know you love the Buckeyes. We know you love the Jackets. We know you're wearing a red shirt. Just freak the hell out of someone. The Fan.
Hey, Bobby Carpenter.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Man once shaved Timmy's leg live on the air. Tune in weekdays at 3 to see what else they'll shave. Wait, what else they'll shave? Who the hell wants to listen to that?
Common Man and Timmy. Smooth as silk.
Okay, The Fan.
Brought in government is...
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We will see increasing clouds throughout the day today with some peaks of sun and some passing snow showers possible. But the story will be the cold air. Gusty winds will make our feels like down into the 20s. And then for tonight, overnight lows will be right around freezing. But yet again, breezy winds will make us feel like we're in the 20s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
All the Ohio State conversation you can handle. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
Your Ohio State flagship station. The Fan. If you say something with enough confidence, it must be true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Monday Night Football last night. Zip, zip at half. First time since 2009 that you've had a Monday Night Football game scoreless going into half. That time it was Baltimore at Cleveland in 2009. Baltimore ended up winning that game 16-0. The Eagles end up winning in the second half. The Packers offensively are offensive as it stands right now. But the thing that got me thinking a little bit after the result of last night and the results of the weekend that included Buffalo losing at Miami, is there anybody great in the NFL this year? And the byproduct of that is this the most wide open? We got about 8 weeks left. Some teams have played 10 games. Some have played 9. So you got about 7 games left, depending on where your bye has hit. We're a little bit past the halfway point. How many teams get up in the morning, look at the mirror, and say, we can win the Super Bowl? It might be the longest list we've had in a very long time. I think just do it by conference. Does New England do that? Yeah. Does Buffalo? Yep. The Steelers? It might be delusional, but I bet that they do. Baltimore absolutely does it 4-5. And by the way, they're going to win that division. Cincinnati at 3-6 with Burrow coming back? Maybe. Maybe. But let's leave them off for now. Indy absolutely does. That's 5. I think 3 in the AFC West. Denver, Chargers, Chiefs, that gets you to 8 that all wake up, look in the mirror and go, yeah, we can win the Super Bowl. That's 8 just in the AFC. Remember, only 7 make the postseason. 8 of them wake up thinking they can win it. Philly thinks they can win it. Detroit does. Green Bay might, but they might have bigger issues than we all realize after losing 2 in a row. Does Chicago? Maybe not, so we're at 10. Tampa Bay, they've kind of hit the skids a little bit, but I'm sure they probably say if we get healthy, we can. Now you're at 11. Seattle, the Rams, and San Francisco all do. That's 14 teams that I bet if you walked into their facility and you asked the general manager, the coach, the best players, the captains, if you walked in there, they'd say, yeah, we can win it this year. 14 teams. And I don't know that that's too many. And the reason for that is I don't know that anybody's great. You watch Philly, I don't know that Philly's great. They didn't look great last night. Detroit can look great. The Rams can look great. Seattle's looked great the last couple of weeks. If you do this same exercise in the AFC, the Chargers look pretty great, but my God, they are just battered and wounded and beaten up. Kansas City's got the highest ceiling because they got the Wizard at quarterback, but they're sitting here at 5-4 right now. New England looks great, but there aren't a whole lot of weapons. How does Buffalo lose to Miami on Sunday? Not just lose, get bombed.
I was thinking of this morning when I was looking at my NFL blitz, and top three teams, and I'm like, I don't even know who the hell to put in here. And it's changed every week the past few weeks. And Bo, to your point, the Kansas City Chiefs, who aren't even in the playoffs at this moment,
right,
are the favorite on ESPN bet to win the Super Bowl
at
5-1. And you mentioned the Baltimore Ravens. They're sitting there at 14-1.
Ooh.
To me,
Sprint.
If I am looking at the AFC, to me, those two teams are my favorites, and they're not even in a playoff spot right now. And that might be crazy, mm-hmm, but I'm not betting on Drake May in the playoffs over Patrick Mahomes until I see it. I'm not betting on Daniel Jones in the playoffs, mm-hmm, until I see it. I'm not betting on Justin Herbert in the playoffs ever.
No.
So,
yeah,
it is insane to think that, but both of those teams out of the playoffs right now. And I would think in the AFC, those are the two teams I'm betting on.
Yeah, it's 14 trust of those. Well, just of the team. I mean, of the 14 teams you mentioned, you know, mm-hmm, you think like, who do I trust? And it's the teams that Baker just mentioned. It's the players that Baker mentioned. It's why they've got those best odds, is because of the other teams that are around. You trust the Wizard, and you trust Andy Reid. You trust the Philadelphia Eagles that come playoff, they'll probably get it together, and mm-hmm, it helps with the tush push. But you know, Seattle, you're unsure. Detroit, I think you have faith in. But yeah, with Daniel Jones as a Super Bowl MVP, like, I don't see it. But it's not to say it can't happen. You just right now can't trust it.
No, I feel like you said Baltimore 14-1.
Correct.
I kind of feel like that. Not quite as strongly as I felt like Jeremiah Smith 30-1. Like, that's that one sprint, and I think many of you did. And I think you'll be just fine on that front. Soft earned, not hard earned, soft earned on that. But I like that a lot. There's great value there. There's great value in Baltimore at 14-1. There's great value. I would say the team that I probably trust the most in the NFC might be the Rams. They might be the team I trust the most. Stafford's playing at an MVP level. He's got 20 touchdowns, no picks in like the last 6 weeks. He's just killing it. I trust them. I trust Detroit in the NFC. I trust Philly, clearly. Trust them. San Francisco, if you can get healthy, because they've done it, Kyle's done it, so there's three or four there. And then the AFC, I think you have the list. It's Kansas City, it's Baltimore, and Buffalo's lack of weapons for Allen is really glaring, and he is kind of on an island a little bit. And for them to go down to Miami and lose like that, that gave me a lot of pause. Because you do wonder, like, did New England pass them? Like, somehow did they pass them in a year? I don't think so. But New England just keeps winning. They've won 7 in a row, including a win at Buffalo.
I think my rebuttal to that is he had the same weapons last year.
Yeah, and they didn't
Josh Allen's. Yeah, but they got to the championship game, right? Mm-mm.
Oh, yeah, they did. They beat Baltimore and then lost.
I mean, it took a Mark Andrews drop, but they got there. So I until I see it, I guess, I have a hard time picking against those three in the mm-hmm. AFC. And it's probably those three that you mentioned in the NFC, too, I would say, right now, with Detroit, Philly, and the Rams. The Rams,
yeah. Yeah, those ones, those six feel the most significant.
Seattle might be able to slip in there.
I mean, can you imagine being Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and you let Sam Darnold walk for the J.J. McCarthy experience? They should have flipped McCarthy. They could have flipped him. There's a lot of teams in the league that were really high on J.J. McCarthy. They could have flipped him and kept Darnold. Darnold's like 10-12. They didn't even throw it in the second half on Saturday, or on Sunday, rather. So one of the big talking points has been this Big Ten private equity. I will acknowledge that there is a lot of weeds you can get into on it, and it gets a little bit Pepe Silvia on you. Amanda Kristovich is going to join us in 2 minutes to separate some fact from some fiction. We will get to that coming up in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up, Jew?
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, here's what's up on a Tuesday edition of the program. One of the talking points here the last week or 10 days or so has been this private equity money that is trying to come into the Big Ten. About 6 weeks ago, my feeling was, talking to my sources at Ohio State, was that this was something Ohio State would not be interested in. It feels like something has changed for the Buckeyes in the last 6 weeks in terms of their interest in this, and that maybe it's just USC and Michigan who are pushing back. But Amanda Krstovich is one of the smartest people in sports business that you're going to find walking the planet. And when we have her on, we get smarter too. And so she joins us now on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Amanda, thank you so much for taking the time. Let's just, this is probably a complicated answer to this. Why would Ohio State want to do this?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me and for the kind words. I'm not sure I'm one of the smartest people walking the planet, but, you know, I'll take it. I mean, look, I think any school that might have an immediate cash flow problem might be potentially interested in this deal because its terms would stipulate that every school gets a minimum of $100 million up front as part of like a pay-in system for UC Investments, the private capital, I guess you could call it the firm, it's a pension fund, right? In order for them to buy in to get that 10% of Big Ten assets. You know, maybe they're also interested in long-term stability of the Big Ten. There's a grant of rights that goes along with this that binds the conference together for 20 years. There's obviously an idea of future revenue goals and growth here. But ultimately, I think that it's really unclear if any schools are in favor of this because, as I wrote, the trustees of all these universities, who are the people who are on the boards of the entire university, not just the athletic department, who are in charge of voting on fiduciary matters most of the time, they have no idea what's going on. They have had a very difficult time receiving any sort of legitimate term sheets or documents or details that have been kept under wraps by, you know, the Big Ten leadership, by university presidents. And so it's really unclear who is in favor of this deal and who isn't, because a lot of these schools don't have all the information.
Okay. This is Tony Petitti's brainchild. And
yep.
did he misread the room?
I think he underestimated the politics at the university-wide level. And I think that he clearly did not see. I mean, look, Tony Petitti doesn't come from the college sports world, and that's not a bad thing, right? But one thing that I've learned as a sports reporter is I can't just cover the schools as if they are only athletic departments. There are politics of these big universities, of these board members and trustees. I mean, they're the ones who make conference realignment decisions, for example. So he clearly underestimated the value of having the university board members, at the very least, on board, even if legally he thinks that the university presidents can unilaterally make these decisions. That just doesn't work. And especially in this political climate where higher education, you know, it has become highly political, and this administration is looking at, you know, gaining more power in this sector. This was like brought up to me that, like, even with a sports problem, these university boards are going to be very incentivized to sort of like assert their dominance. And I think Tony Petitti just totally underestimated that.
Yeah, me too. I got to be honest, I about 6 weeks ago, my sourcing at Ohio State was like, yeah, we're not for this, but something up there changed. And according to folks that I've talked to, Ohio State's change has been this is going to be weighted. So they're going to get a lot more than, say, Rutgers and Purdue and that. Yep. And then the other part of it is they believe that they are going to really drive the bus on where this goes for the next line of expansion, the less media rights deal, all of that. Okay, fine. But why, and this is the part I'm struggling with, why would a program like Ohio State, which is the behemoth maybe in all of college athletics, why would they tether themselves to some of the programs in this league until 2046? And why would they give up any percentage of their power?
Well, I think maybe they're looking at this deal as an opportunity to gain more power than they currently have in the current system. This idea, as you said, you know, I've also been able to confirm that, like, Ohio State would get the most revenue. You know, they're in tier one of this. And, you know, a lot of the reports, the reason why USC is against this, one of the reasons is they're not in tier one. And they're like, wait a second, why are we in tier one?
Yeah.
So I think from that perspective, it's like, okay, maybe this is better than what we have now. But I really can't give you an answer to the question of why a school like Ohio State, with so much power and so much notoriety, would want to tether itself to anything that is 20 years down the line beyond just fear. But I just don't think that, you know, just look at what's going on in the ACC. I don't think any sort of 20-year grant of rights makes sense, no matter how good the upfront cash flow is.
And so Michigan's pushback, and I really thought Ohio State, this would be like the one thing Ohio State and Michigan would see eye to eye on, but because they're both tier one, they're both going to get, and Penn State's in that tier as well, according to a lot of the reporting. Mm-hmm. So, okay, yep. So Michigan's pushback is what I thought Ohio State's would be. When you, from that perspective, and right now the Big Ten makes this play saying, like, all right, Michigan, Ohio, or Michigan, USC, you have until now to make a decision. Otherwise, we're going at it without you. Do you think that's going to hold up?
No, I don't think that makes any sense. And I don't think it makes sense because of, again, like what I was hearing on Sunday, which was that trustees at universities across the spectrum, across the country at multiple schools, are up in arms about this. You know, Michigan and USC have come out as the public face of the opposition to the deal. Michigan has made it very clear that they do not think that the deal is good on its merits, right? But there are trustees at Big Ten schools across the country who are against the deal for the sole reason that they don't know whether or not they're against the deal because they don't have the information. It's being kept from them. And so I don't know how you could say a school like Penn State, for example, is in favor of this deal because there are trustees at Penn State who, you know, are not in favor of the deal, right? Because they don't know what the deal is.
Jeez.
And that's not just Michigan and USC. So there's this other tier of schools that I don't even know if they're in favor of this or not. And, you know, I haven't spoken with anyone, you know, quick disclaimer, I haven't spoken with anyone at Ohio State in the last few days, but I would imagine that there are trustees there probably in a similar boat. And so then, I mean, is this a legal question of who has the legal authority to sign on to this? If the university president and the athletic director like the deal, but the trustees don't, it's very muddled and it's very unclear who's even in favor of this because of that.
Good grief. She's Amanda Kristovich, front office sports, one of the smartest people in sports media you're ever going to find. This is the second most popular, speaking of college football, it's become the second most popular sport in this country from a rating standpoint, from an interaction standpoint, from a business standpoint. Amanda, sometimes it feels like it's gotten there despite itself. What do you see in the next 5 years?
Oh, man. Well, how much time do you have?
About 2 minutes.
Okay, well, in 2 minutes, look, I think, like, college football as a sport, every single time there is a major change on the business side of college football, whether it be NIL, revenue sharing, this, you know, the specter of private capital, private equity, right? And there's this, like, doomsday rhetoric. And college football has never been more popular, despite the players getting paid. I would argue that, Ohio State's at the top, but for everybody else who's not, there's a lot more parity than there's ever been. Chaos has created parity. And everybody who said that the haves will get more and the have-nots will get less, I don't think that that is necessarily the case. And so I think the health of the sport on the field is really kind of fun and good. I think that, you know, the biggest question was, you know, is conference realignment the thing that's going to tank it? That might be the biggest issue because of the lack of rivalries and regionality, and we've all had those conversations, right? So yeah. I just don't see the sport of college football becoming less popular or less fun anytime soon, despite the consternation of, you know, coaches, administrators, conference officials, et cetera. I think that it's in a good place and it's going to continue to be. And, you know, it's hard to work in it. It's hard to figure out what the future of it is going to be. But I mean, I'm having a really fun season.
It's great.
Every Saturday is quite fun for me. The rest of the week kind of sucks.
It's great.
Saturday's still fun.
It is. It's great. It's an unbelievable topic. You're one of the best at it. We thank you so much for your time. Thanks for giving us a little bit of it today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, there she goes. Amanda Kristovich, Front Office Sports. So a hand was played, and it appears that not everybody understood the game. And so there's going to be a lot of turns in this thing over the next couple of weeks, would be my guess. We'll hit the real truth coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
The only workplace in America to participate in the Doorknob Fart Game. And we also play office basketball and sometimes do radio. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Another summer is...
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE. Night football on The Fan 2. Catch the Jets and Patriots live from Foxborough. Fan coverage starts Thursday at 8 on 1460 AM and The Fan's HD2.
Sponsored by Roosters, a fun casual joint.
Your radio home of the NFL, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
A giant...
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car... Maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE. Favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Our top men are working on everything except this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
And it's your Uncle Bo here, proud to tell you about my friends at Diamond Cellar, who know that forever starts with the perfect diamond. For over 78 years, their families helped generations of couples celebrate love with brilliance, quality, and unbeatable prices. At Diamond Cellar, bigger diamonds and better prices are their promise to you. So whether you're popping the question or upgrading your sparkle, trust the experts at Diamond Cellar, because diamonds are their forte. Visit Diamond Cellar today, Sawmill Road, Easton Town Center. Learn more at DiamondCellar.com. Time for The Real Truth on a truncated Tuesday edition. Hit it, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present The Real Truth.
Sponsored by Diamond Cellar. Over 76 years of experience and guaranteed lowest prices on Sawmill Road or DiamondCellar.com.
The second set of college football playoff rankings will be released tonight at 8 o'clock. 7 o'clock, excuse me. Yeah. Will be the release time for the second set. Matty Ice and AR are going to be doing a watch-along on YouTube. So the fans' YouTube, it can be your companion piece for the college football playoff committee. Four Big Ten teams will make the final CFB playoff bracket. Is that the real truth?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is. And I think one of them could even be with three losses. I don't think it has to be. But I think it could be. And I do think you're going to get four, because I don't think you're going to get five SEC. So you're going to get one ACC. That leaves you 11. You're going to get one group of five. That gets you 10. I think you're only going to get one Big 12. I think you're going to have a little bit more chaos in that conference here over the last 3 weeks when I looked at the schedules. I think you're going to get one of those. That leaves nine spots for the Big Ten and the SEC. And despite what Greg Sankey said yesterday, he's not getting, he's talking about six. Get the hell out of here, dude. Get I got buddies who go to Vandy. Come on, stop it. They you're done. I'm not taking three loss Vandy. I'm not taking three loss Tennessee. I'm not taking three loss Texas. Get out of here.
I'll just say this about that.
I think they are going to have four.
That Sankey quote, I think, was fake.
Was it really?
Because nobody else had it but this one reporter.
Okay.
And even I think Grok called it out as he didn't say that.
Okay. Well, thank God.
Because you don't see
you can't even
else.
Tell what's real or not anymore. I mean, I'm a man, I'm approaching 50, and I don't have a clue what's real or what's not. How the hell are kids supposed to know what's real or what's not?
But I
think they are going to get four. To answer the question, I think they're going to get four.
I thought this was the real truth until last week, and I do not think that's the case anymore. Because I am not a believer in USC. I do not think
What will it take?
I don't know. Nothing.
Why
because
are
I don't
you,
think I don't think they're beating Oregon.
You just
Oregon.
Take California? Is that your problem?
I don't think they're beating Oregon. I mean, California is easy to hate, right? But
it's very easy to love. It's like always sunny every day. I mean, there's
well, the
no
The state's great, but like the people just can't make good decisions.
Are lovely.
I was built for San Diego,
the
not
winemakers.
Texas, I've said. So, I don't think USC beats Oregon. I don't think they can, and that puts them out. And I'm not even going to.
Why are they out though?
They've proven it. Where have they been ranked the whole time?
No. But if you're gonna have, I just told you there's going to be nine teams.
But I don't think the Big Ten gets a three loss team.
So you think the SEC is going to have multiple three loss teams, but the Big Ten's not going to have one?
I just don't think it's happening for the Big Ten. They've proven,
that would be a massive,
they've
massive.
Proven that they don't love the Big Ten teams. They don't love Washington. They don't love Iowa. They haven't given love to Illinois.
When it comes down to it, though, Bake, like, can you really throw in six from the SEC? Well, you're going to have Notre Dame, so that gets you down to one. So that gives you eight spots. So, like, if it's three, then you're going to get five SEC teams in, and multiple will have three losses.
I think we're getting two Big 12 teams. I think we're on the path to two Big 12 teams if things shake out. I just don't think the Big Ten is getting a three-loss team in. So
okay,
I think your Big Ten teams are Ohio State, right. Indiana, and Oregon.
And Oregon. Okay. So let's say it's Utah. What has Utah done that USC has not?
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying what the CFP, the AP, all of those things have told us so far how they feel about some of these Big Ten teams.
I will say this, the CFP seems to like the Big Ten more than the AP.
A little more than the AP, correct.
Iowa appears, Washington appears, so I'm interested tonight, again, 7 o'clock for the rankings and for the reveal, mm-hmm. what they do with the Hawkeyes.
So here's the thing, just to do the USC thing, just for a moment. They get Iowa at home this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that will be their fourth-ranked team that they've played. Then they are at Oregon. That'll be the fifth ranked team that they played. Their two losses are at Illinois on the last play of the game, and they lost to Notre Dame by 10. But if you watch that game, it was a lot closer than that. At Notre Dame and at Illinois. That's it. If they lose a close game to Oregon, they have three, and I know you hate the three loss thing, but three loss SEC teams are getting in. So the Big Ten needs to fight for USC.
I agree. They should fight for
them. They should fight for them.
I just don't think it's happening. I think that
right.
they have told us how they feel about. I think they like the top of the Big Ten. I don't think they don't. They don't like the next level compared to the SEC.
Man, I don't know how these SEC teams. I mean, Ole Miss is going to get there with just two losses. Georgia. I mean, Texas is going to lose this weekend.
I'm not stumping for this. I'm just saying this is how I think it's going to be.
Is that how you hear it, Reese? It seems to me like he's stumping for the SEC.
The big SEC honk.
Yeah.
No, I think
it's like you and Strom Thurmond.
I'm trying to think how
Don't
many
Don't you
books...
remember him?
No.
He was a senator from Georgia. He was like 170 years old, and he was still a senator.
Yeah, he was. Guys, we got to figure out term limits. What are we doing?
Nah, if you can greet at Walmart, you can... No problem.
Continuing on with the CFP rankings, Ohio State will be number one in the reveal tonight. Is that the real truth?
Yes. Yep.
If it is not the real truth, there is something majorly wrong, I believe. But Lane Kiffin doesn't think that should be the real truth.
I think in some ways a little bit, but... You know, I think that some other people have pointed out in other ways, no, like, you know, Texas A&M being three, you know, well, what more do you want them to do to be one? You know, like I said, when people want to schedule and they say, okay, man, we need you to schedule hard teams. You're going to have now nine SEC and then play another hard one. Well, they went up to Notre Dame and won. So those people that say, man, those schedules are worth it to play that. What if they didn't play Notre Dame? If they just played whoever and just had an easy win, they'd be ranked in the same spot. So what good did that do if that's not rewarded? You know? So they got the highest metrics of everybody and they're not number one. So I don't know. Again, you talk about those two teams right there, put them on a neutral site, ask Vegas who would win, what's the spread. And that to me shows more than people sitting around a room just guessing.
That had to be in reference to Indiana, right? There's no way that was in reference to Ohio State, because he knows Ohio State would be favored by 6.5 over Texas A&M.
The question, and I don't know what he was talking about there, the question was, did he feel the SEC got represented well enough in the very first CFP?
Yeah, but I think what I'm curious about, there's no way. I look, his point of what's the point of playing them, that's fair. My hunch is that what he's saying is he's comparing Texas A&M to Indiana. There is no way in blue hell he's comparing Texas A&M to Ohio State. Because if those two teams play on a neutral field, it's Buckeyes by 6.5 or 7.5.
And that's, again, I don't know what he was saying there at the end. If he was talking Indiana A&M or if he was talking Ohio State A&M. But he did say he wasn't happy that Texas A&M wasn't number one.
Yeah.
He could have been talking about Ohio State, but he, as you mentioned there, he's making good points, and then he contradicts himself when he says, well, let's see what Vegas would say, because Vegas would have Ohio State favored over everyone.
For sure. By the way, from the corrections department, Strom Thurmond actually died in 2003, so been a minute.
While he was a sitting senator, probably.
And he was from South Carolina.
That's how this works.
Not Georgia, so that's a bad job out of me. We'll blitz the NFL coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If the sound of another man slammed against plexiglass turns you on, you've come to the right place. Proud to be your home for Jackets hockey. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Happy Veterans Day. I'm Eric Reeser. Number one, Ohio State hosts UCLA Saturday night at 7:30. OSU's head coach will hold his weekly press conference this morning at 11. We'll carry Ryan Day's comments live on The Fan when he takes the podium. Buckeyes will likely remain in the top spot of the second set of college football playoff rankings that will be released tonight at 7 o'clock. In the NFL last night, the Eagles beat the Packers 10-7. Philly's tied with Seattle for the best record in the NFC at 7-2. Week 11 in the league begins Thursday as the Patriots host the Jets. In college hoops, Ohio State hosts Appalachian State tonight at 6:30. You can hear that game on The Fan with pregame coverage at 5:30. Buckeyes are 2-0 and will host Notre Dame Saturday at 12:30. And in the NHL, the Blue Jackets dropped their fourth straight, a 5-4 loss last night in OT at the Edmonton Oilers. This update is sponsored by Green & Sons, family-owned and operated for over 45 years. Find your next Kubota tractor at Green & Sons, located in Mount Sterling and north of Marysville in Raymond.
The best hair on the air.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, so we have a little bit of clarity here. This was from 45 minutes ago, Lane Kiffin on X. Indiana, Ohio State was the conversation, FYI. He's not an idiot. He's not an idiot.
Like, really good job out of him.
Yeah, he's no dummy. He's not talking about the Buckeyes. Don't ever put the Buckeyes name in your mouth, Lane. He knows better than that. He knows. So good job out of him. All right, let's blitz the NFL.
Bishop and Friends present NFL Blitz.
Sponsored by Monogram Homes. Go custom. Go Monogram. Visit monogramhomes.net to start building.
All right, I believe I had that. Bake, I'll start with you. What did you have this week in the National Football League?
I had that Jacksonville was fake good. They started the year hot. They were 4-1. They've lost three of their last four. Now, you could argue that they should have lost four of their last four. They barely got that win over the Raiders last week. Yeah. They probably should have won this week, and they let the Texans just blow up and score a ton of points on them in the fourth quarter. Jacksonville may have something to build on here, and they may be working towards being a good team. They're just not that yet.
Big injuries, too. Thomas and Hunter, they don't really have any weapons, so a lot of issues there. Reese?
I mean, I was 2-11. 2-12.
2-12, yeah.
So I didn't have a lot. What I did have was Philadelphia Eagles. Barely.
Yeah, I'm not. We'll get into what I didn't have momentarily, which was quite honestly a lot and as embarrassing a week of NFL picks as I've ever had. But one thing that I have had all season long is Thursday night football picks. So I'm 8-1 against the number all season long on Thursday night football, and have not missed one on Thursday night football since week two. So in a week where everything else went to hell in a handbasket, we got the Thursday night football game again. I did not have that. What did you not have, Bake?
I did not have the Patriots being this damn good. I knew Mike Vrabel coming in would help them take a step. It feels like they've taken three steps this year. That was a big win. I think Tampa Bay is a pretty good team. Baker has proven himself, I believe, to be right there around top 10 quarterback status. And they went in there and got the win. They just beat them.
Yeah,
it's pretty impressive.
It wasn't even as close as the final score would lead you to believe either.
I didn't have the Bills doing that or getting that done to the Bills. I mean, they look listless in Miami. Dolphins are not 2-7.
I didn't get much else. I think I only got three right in the NFL this week. So it was an unmitigated disaster. But I think the Bills one was the most stupefying. Just the way that it went down, like to just get punched in the mouth in South Florida. I did not have that at all. And shame on me for not picking New England with all the injuries Tampa. We certainly knew that New England is legit. They've proven that. So that's a bad job out of me for not picking that one here. Player who impressed, Bay, who do you got?
I don't know how you can go against Jonathan Taylor. 244 yards, three touchdowns, put that Colts team on his back and got that win against the Falcons over in Germany this weekend. I understand it's a quarterback league and a quarterback award. I don't know how that dude's not the MVP.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor's probably the ultimate one from week 10 in the NFL, but Travion Henderson, I was really impressed with how he played. This is something that you saw from him watching him play at Ohio State. Mm-hmm. 14 carries, 147 yards, and two touchdowns. And on that final one, late in the fourth quarter, where as he's breaking away from everybody on Tampa Bay's defense, he looked over to the sideline to see if he should go down. And Tyvus made a great point when I was on with the boys earlier. Mm-hmm. That he was just trying to do everything extra he could to get out of the doghouse. And it's like, well, that's the kind of person Travion is.
Wonder what he's in the doghouse for to begin with. I mean, that's even that part's crazy. I mean, he was 14 for 150 in this game and was as dynamic as we all knew. By the way, Ohio State's been NFLU for a long, long time, probably a decade they've been NFLU. I don't know if it's ever been better than it is right now. It feels like every weekend a Buckeye is dominating in the National Football League. It's a stunning thing to watch. I like where both of you guys went. I think Drake May, real quick on Drake May, he was drafted third. He was drafted to a regime that has been replaced. He was drafted to a team without much for weaponry, and he's elevating everybody. That's a special player. When you can have adversity and elevate it, that's special. So some props for there. But this is my favorite stat of the week. Over the weekend, Derrick Henry crossed over career numbers 12,127 yards rushing. 12,127. It's his 10th NFL season. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's going to glide into Canton very, very easily. 12,127. Took him 10 years in the NFL. Why is that significant? It took him 10 years in the NFL to surpass how many yards rushing he had in high school. He had 12,000 yards rushing in high school.
Hell of a stat.
one of the most stupefying stats. It's Cy Young, 511 wins. It's the Wilt 100-point game. It's all of that. It will never. That is the most stupefying stat in the history of high school football. I really believe it. Player who disappointed. Who do you got, Bake?
To me, it's J.J. McCarthy.
Sure is.
I am not one who thinks that J.J. McCarthy is no good and going to be a bust. I think J.J. McCarthy's a quarterback that you can't judge stats on like we do other quarterbacks, because I feel like he's a throwback type quarterback. Like 30 years ago, we would have loved J.J. McCarthy, I think. But in today's NFL, maybe not so much. He had the Vikings right there in that game with Baltimore, and they had a chance to pull it out at the end. And he just made two or three of the worst throws that I have ever seen. And I think J.J. does a lot of things to help teams win that don't show up on the stats and keep him plays alive with his legs. I saw him do it against Ohio State. But, man, that was really bad in that final drive against Baltimore.
I just don't think he should have been picked that high.
Probably not.
You know.
And he was, I think, Minnesota's leading rusher in that game, too. So, like, I think the Vikings have some serious problems. For me, it was the Packers' offensive line. Like, late in the game, that fourth and one, Philadelphia just snuffed out Josh Jacobs on that. And it's like, you're supposed to push forward, guys.
On the McCarthy one, I think I have this right. So, he was 20 of 42 in this game. He targeted Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison 23 times. Do you know how many completions he completed to those two? Seven. That ain't it.
It's not good.
That ain't it. That ain't quarterback play at all. But I'm going to add one in that draft class as well, because Michael Penix might not be any good. Or their situation is a mess, because he is less than 50% completions this year. They mortgaged a lot to pick him high because they kind of had everything else. They had just signed Cousins. They thought he was special. Either they're not putting him in a position to succeed or he's not special, but we're 2 years into this thing. He's played quite a bit of football, and it's been a real struggle last couple of weeks for him, really last four games. Bud Kilmer, honorary coach of the week. Who do you got, Bick?
I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's Mike McDaniel. A couple weeks ago, when the Miami owner came out and said, we're not going to get rid of him if the players are still playing for him. And by God, those players are still playing for him. For them to go in there and do that to Buffalo, I don't know if it says more about them or it says more about Buffalo last week, but that's a heck of a win for Miami.
And afterwards, some trolling Bills fans drove by a Buffalo bar.
That was amazing.
Poked his head out of the window. Dan Campbell for me. I think that's the proper way to handle any sort of consternation on your team. Like, if the current players aren't thrilled with what's happening or how the offensive coordinator's handling things, then you handle it as the head coach. And he took over play calling, and boy, did Detroit look good. Really good offensively in their win at Washington.
Yeah, I think those were two that I had written down. I'll add Vrabes to that. They've won seven in a row. I love him waiting for every guys that run into the locker room going NFC South champs, giving them a high five. Just awesome. He's just a leader of men. He's just a leader of men is what he is. Your top three teams right now, Bake, who do you got?
I'm all NFC this week. I've got Philadelphia, I've got Seattle, and I've got Detroit.
I got Eagles, Seahawks, Lions. So all of mine exist in the NFC as well.
I went Seahawks, Rams, Patriots as my top three as it stands right now. But it goes to the exercise we did earlier in the show that we've never had anything this wide open with this much to play. I mean, I think there's seven or eight teams in the league who say, there's probably 14 who believe they can win the Super Bowl. There's another seven or eight who we go, yeah, I can see it. It could happen. Makes sense. Speaking of that, your Super Bowl right now is what, Bake?
So I had Philly, New England written down, but after our conversation earlier, I'm changing that because I can't have Drake May. Drake May's not beating Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs, is he?
If Pat gets there, he's got to get there.
How can you have somebody in the Super Bowl that's not even in the playoffs right now?
I have Detroit and New England.
I got Rams, Pats. I was tempted to go Rams, Ravens. But I'm going to go Rams-Pats right now. But I think there are four contenders, really legit contenders in the NFC, and another five or six in the AFC. It is wide open. One of those contenders could be the Cincinnati Bengals. Joe Burrow could be back sooner than any of us thought. We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you consider yourself a Buckeye fan, you've come to the right place.
This is your heritage sports talker and home of Ohio State Athletics. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Rothman and Ice every Thursday at 2:30 for Gold Jacket Thursday.
Presented by the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
A new Hall of Famer joins the show every week.
But not OJ, because he's dead and probably a murderer.
The Fan.
Hello.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We will see increasing clouds throughout the day today with some peaks of sun and some passing snow showers possible. But the story will be the cold air. Gusty winds will make our feels like down into the 20s. And then for tonight, overnight lows will be right around freezing. But yet again, breezy winds will make us feel like we're in the 20s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
Bobby Carpenter demands that you watch Morning Juice on YouTube. If you don't, Tito will move into your house.
Live at 6 a.m. on YouTube and streaming on the Fan app.
After putting up with Dom DeBerry for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is, and we are proudly sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler, for over 78 years. Well, I did not have this at all, that Joe Burrow would return sooner rather than later. He told reporters Monday that he is going to attempt to return from turf toe on Thanksgiving. Do we have the audio here of him?
Or would it be to do your history in Baltimore, be in the division game, to come back for that game?
Very.
Is that your target?
We'll see. We'll see how these next couple weeks go.
So I got the Ravens Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Ravens on Thanksgiving. I would have thought it would have been sometime into December on that. Fellas, I don't see it here in the rundown. The sound from Joe. Is that the only one we have?
So we have that, and then we have him talking about how he still thinks this could possibly be a playoff team, too.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, our division is wide open. I think Pittsburgh's 5-4 at this point. We play them this week. So, you know, everything is still there in front of us. Very rare that our division looks like this, but it does this year. And so, you know, I think we'll be at least in it until the end.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Just imagine if they don't blow it with the Jets and the Bears. You're sitting at 5-4. And Burrow, maybe we laid this all out. I mean, those were must-win games. You're sitting there at 5-4. Burrow's coming back, we thought, in the middle of December. Now he's kind of targeting a couple of weeks. I mean, him practicing now opens up a 21-day window where they have to activate him. Now, they don't have to play him, but they have to activate him within that 21 days and have him ready to play. The tricky part of all of this from a Bengals fan perspective, though, is the offense isn't the problem. They're scoring. They're scoring in waves. They can't stop anybody. And so unless Joe Flacco is going to be a defensive end, when Joe comes back to play quarterback, it's hard to – I'm not sure what good this will do. As good as Joe is, can he play better than Joe Flacco has the last two times out? Maybe a little, but that's not going to be the difference between winning and losing those games.
Yeah, it's not like you've got teams that won't be able to hang with you as you're scoring 35 points a game. Like, you might – Sunday against the Steelers, be able to outscore them. You turn it into a track meet, but Patriots, Ravens, Bills, Ravens, the four opponents after that, no. Like, you're not going to be able to outrun them. They will be able to keep up with you in said track meet. And then when the time you get to the Cardinals and the Browns, the Dolphins, Cardinals, actually, no, I'll throw the Dolphins in there, is they can keep up with you in a track meet. The Dolphins team you saw Sunday against the Bills, that was a track meet team. The final two games, Cardinals and Browns, it won't matter. You'll be dead.
If you're the Bengals and you lose these next two, you lose at the Steelers and you lose the Patriots, do you rush him back for that Thanksgiving Day game?
He's going to turn 29 years old. You've paid him a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Like,
I just...
I know where you're going, and I would probably lean where you are, which would be, no, I would not. Like, it's a lost season. I would not. But I'm sure he wants to play. And I'll tell you what I think that they're pointing at, guys. If they can win at Pittsburgh this week, they would improve to 3-0 in the division.
Yeah.
They already have the win against Cleveland in the opener. They already beat Pittsburgh at home. If they win at Cleveland, if they win at Pittsburgh on Sunday, they'll be 3-0 in the division. That's their best path to the playoffs.
I just hope for him. He's somebody who's obviously battled injuries quite a bit, and turf toe can be a pretty serious injury, something that you deal with the rest of your life, not just your playing career. Yeah. And luckily, he didn't have to have surgery. It wasn't bad enough where he had to do that. I love watching him play football. I am not a Bengals fan at all, but I love watching Joe Burrow play football, and I want to watch Joe Burrow play football for another 8 to 10 years. So I don't want him to rush back here in a season that could be lost and get hurt again and cause permanent damage where his career gets shorter. That's me as a fan of watching Joe Burrow play football, but I get the football mentality, and I would love to have my quarterback doing everything he can to be out there on the field.
I'm not a doctor, but maybe Joe's toe feeling better makes Trey's back feel a little better, and also makes me wonder why they didn't do anything at the deadline to acquire some help defensively. If they knew this,
or why didn't they punt on Trey, Reese?
If they knew this was going to be the path, and I don't know, two weeks ago, how could they not have? If they're talking to him, I mean, he's in the building, he's on the sidelines. Yeah. If you're talking to him and his medical team, you have an understanding of what the timetable wants to be. They didn't just pull Thanksgiving out of midair on a Monday.
Mm-mm.
So what were you just sitting on your hands for, guys?
Yeah, I don't know. It's one thing on this injury, and I didn't know this until yesterday, and you guys have it in the prep here, that it's the left foot toe. So it's not his plant foot, right? It's his step foot as he throws.
Which that helps tremendously.
Great toe. That's big, right. So he's not having to leverage off of that. His right toe would be the one that is his plant foot, and that would be the one that he'd drive the ball off of. This is the one he's stepping with. So now you're going to throw off platform and a million other things, but it's not the one that primarily he's going to throw off of. So that's some big news there. He also acknowledged that there's going to be some hardware in his cleats in that left toe to protect it as well. So I'm of the belief if he's healthy and wants to play, play him. He's almost 29.
Absolutely.
He'll be 29 in a month. Play him. And see what happens. And I mean, this is his job, is to be a professional football player. So, but this would be way quicker than any of us thought if he can play on Thanksgiving against Baltimore. Kevin Stefanski had his weekly, his Monday press conference, of course, on Monday. It was following a pretty stupefying loss to the New York Jets, a loss in which his team lost the game despite giving up less than 175 yards and not turning the football over. It's the first time since 1950 that a team has lost in that fashion, which is hard to wrap your head around. A big reason for that loss was the fact that they had a kick return and a punt return. I guess in order, it would have been a punt return and a kick return touchdown back to back. They were minus 14 in special teams, which is impossible in this day and age to be. Here was Stefanski on the two kick return touchdowns.
Yeah, obviously, not good enough. We can be way, way better than that. Some of these big ones, you got to get the guy on the ground and limit, what could be a bad return for you, but get him on the ground for a gain of 20 or whatever it is. So frustrating for those balls to go the other way on us. And we'll look at them and learn from them and understand how we can be better in a technique sense. And then we'll look at how we can move our guys around to make sure we got guys in the right spots and like we always do. But yeah, that's tough to win on the road, tough to win a football game, giving up those two returns.
We looked at this. There were 19 what we would call dynamic plays and special teams so far this NFL season. So what I mean by that is punt blocks, kick blocks, returns, kick return, punt returns. 19 in the league. The Browns have four of them. They have four of them. They've given up two punt return touchdowns. They've given up a kick return touchdown. They got a block kick. So they've given up four dynamic special teams plays, which leads to the question,
Bubba Ventrone is the special teams coordinator of the Cleveland Browns. Does Kevin Stefanski still have faith in his special teams coordinator? Here's his answer to that.
I have a ton of faith in Bubba. I have a ton of faith in our special teams. We have to be better. That's the case. There are ways that we can try to be better. But it's definitely we'll continue to coach our guys hard. We'll continue to give them the techniques to use. But I trust our guys. I trust that we'll get back to work.
Bo, I made the mistake of cutting this Kevin Stefanski audio up this morning. I should have let somebody else do it.
Or just taking cuts from last week.
Because for 2 years now, Kevin, you've said we got to be better and we're going to learn. When is it going to happen? Because it's not getting better, Kevin. It's getting worse. It's progressively gotten worse with you. And I don't think you're all to blame because I think the GM is right there with you in lockstep. But just stop. Like, I don't know what he's supposed to say, but give us... He took full credit for the loss. He took it on himself. Yeah. He didn't blame anyone else. Kudos to him for that. But when, Kevin, when is it going to get better? When are you going to learn? Because I haven't seen it in 2 years.
Yeah, I was surprised there weren't some changes to what they do yesterday. I do think that's fair, like to just keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result, Reese.
I just keep looking at 2-7 and go, what do you expect them to say? Historically, they've shown this is who they are. This is who this front office is. This is who this team is. Your record is who you are. And last year was 3-14. Your record's who you are, guys. Mm-hmm. So I understand, Baker, the frustration. Certainly it's justified. They can't do anything else. They stink. This stinks. And they're not getting out of it anytime soon.
But they can do things, though. They can make changes, right? Because
changes, you mean firing people. Yes, and fine.
This,
but
this regime has had enough time, I feel like. It's just been a steady decline for the most part.
2 minutes from now, Uncle Dom's pop stops by for a little Tuesdays with Tiberi, Bishop and Friends, right here.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Bishop and Friends present Tuesdays with Tiberi.
Sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Dr. Mark Levy today at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP.
How excited were you for the cold?
Oh, yeah, I just love it. You know, you and I are lockstep. This is fabulous. I mean, they're walking around work. Hey, we're going to have a contest to guess how much snow we get. I don't want that. I don't want to be part of that. I don't like the snow. You know I've never liked it. And I woke up and it's Antarctica outside. It's ridiculous. That's all I got to say about
how are you? Snow. Let me ask you this, because I got to tell
and
you.
And then I'm
going really...
to tell you the other thing. The smartest thing you said, you know, okay. I love you. But the greatest thing you said, and I am so correct, you're so right on this. Mm-hmm. 5 o'clock, I'm ready to go to bed.
Right.
I have not adjusted to this time switch. I hate it. Go back to where it was. Leave it be. I don't understand. So we change it, October 31st. And then it comes back, in March? We go back to what? So why? Why? For what? So you get an extra hour or whatever in the morning? I mean, what are you talking about? Who cares? Just leave it one place.
Just
because
pick
then
one.
When it comes back, I'm exhausted because right now it's 10:30 in the morning, but my body thinks it's 11:30.
This is the biggest negative adjustment I've had to it that I can recall in my life, buddy. I feel like everything after 5:30 feels like 9 o'clock at night.
Let me tell you something. Every year gets weirder as you get older. Wait till you hit the 50. The 40s, it's like, it's funny because I was telling some kids I was talking to that, you know, with the medical plans and all this. And, you know, I said, let me tell you something. You're how old? And they're like in their early 30s or late 20s. I said, when you get to be 40, call me up and tell me, because once you get to 40, I don't care who you are, they're going to put you on some kind of pill. You know, you're going on some kind of pill once you get over 40.
It's going to be something.
You know? Well, it's something. They're going to put you on a statin. They're going to put you on something. Just, yeah. Well, you know, you got heart conditions in your family. We're just going to put you. So eventually you're going to be, and then when you get into 50, and then when you get into the 60s, you don't even want to talk about it. I'm telling you. I mean, it's like, goodness, it's the process. You know, it's our turn in the barrel. You're going to be 40 when? When are you going to be 40?
40? I've been a man. I'm 40 for years, buddy. I'm in the back stretch. I'm the back stretch of the 40s. I mean,
How many pills are you on? Are you on any pills yet?
No, I'm not on any meds. No, I'm not on any meds.
Not
thankfully.
Yet. Well,
not
you, yet. You got good genes.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I have any. I don't know if I have that at all.
That's that high living out in the Ponderosa. You know,
you get that clean air. Clean air out there.
The clean air, and you're just eating roadkill. You don't. Nothing's processed.
Why would we eat roadkill? You could hunt. We have cows on the Ponderosa. You just butcher them.
Elk, and we're going to have elk for dinner.
That's right. That's it. That's how you do it. You just go. You go take care of the cow, and you get, and you're ready to go. That's it. Whatever you need. You don't got to go to the store for any of that stuff, my friend. It's all. No, it's all on the up and up.
Right there. Hey, go get a chicken.
I never was fond of those, as you know. What do you make of this private equity play that Tony Petitti's trying to cook up? Because my sourcing like 6-8 weeks ago was that Ohio State was opposed to this. And then talking to people in the last week, they've come around and are now in favor of it. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why.
It's a cash grab. Mm-hmm. We can agree on that, right? And the bottom line is it's not sustainable what they are doing now. You know, you can only go so many times to the boosters and say, hey, we need this, we need this. And, you know, we've already got one professional league, and we're seeing another created. I don't understand it enough. I've looked at it. I and it just looks like, you know, they're taking investors and they're going to take money. But it's all about the fund, NIL, the transfer portal, mm-hmm. all this, because you got to have a revenue stream that is beyond your boosters. You got to have that. And, you know, if you want to compete, and we can say we don't like it, we don't whatever, but the bottom line is, you know, Clemson didn't embrace it. How are they doing? You got to embrace it. You got to embrace the transfer portal. You got to embrace NIL. And, you know, you and I have often said, you know, this is the way of the world. It's not going back. Nothing's going to go back. They had their chances years ago to get ahead of this. They chose not to. They kept kicking the can. Well, now the can hit a brick wall, and the brick wall ain't moving.
Do you remember David Scatino?
Yes.
So he borrowed money from this guy named Richie Aprile.
Yeah.
And because he had a little bit of a poker problem. He wasn't great at playing cards, but he had a sporting goods store, you see. And that sporting goods store was going to be how he was going to pay back Richie Aprile. Now, you tell me how that worked out.
Didn't work out well. And a lot of times it doesn't work out. The difference is, hopefully, they're not doing business with the Soprano family or the Corleone family, Kavish. I mean, hopefully they're not. But, I mean, you know, it makes... Here's the bottom line. They got to figure a revenue stream.
I just don't think that Ohio State should be tethered by the dregs of this league. I don't think you have to prop up Rutgers and Purdue and Maryland and Minnesota's. Like, you don't need to prop them up anymore. Like, you need to look in the mirror. Look at these games we're playing. We're 30-point favorites 3 weeks in a row. What are we even doing? This is nonsense.
Well, and here's the thing. That Ohio State can either say, listen, it's been the Big Two and Little Eight. That's what they used to call the Big Ten, mm-hmm. right? The Big Two, Little Eight. I mean, the bottom dwellers have been the bottom dwellers, and the bottom dwellers have it better than they ever have. Now, Indiana, let's see. You know, I personally believe they may be a little bit of a paper tiger. We shall see. But the bottom line is this. you're absolutely right. The Ohio States, the Michigans, you know, do they need this? Probably not. Although I still think it's not sustainable for Ohio State going forward with the talent that they bring in. They got to have a revenue stream somehow to pay these guys.
I think they have to make the decision. I think it is sustainable, but probably not if you want to keep 36 sports.
Well,
you know, like Texas has got
some of them, and that's why Texas some has got 16 clubs. And
Texas has got 16 sports. You know, like some of these in the South have 12. You know, we're trying to maintain 36 sports and keep everybody. I mean, that's really what it is. It's the athletic departments are not great businesses. I mean, they make a lot of money, but they're not being run for profit, or they haven't been for the longest time. And so that's how you kind of get into this. I did find it interesting that Michigan was so adamantly opposed to this, because I did think that this would be the one thing that Ohio State and Michigan would see eye to eye on.
Well, you got to understand, too, Michigan's revenue source is different than a lot of the other schools, too. I mean, you got Detroit, you got the Big Three, you got all that revenue. They've got that huge revenue stream. You know, the bottom line is this. We got spoiled at Ohio State because, you know, not only as fans, because they always win, but this football program would bring in so much money. They paid for all the other sports.
Yeah.
Plus, they also gave money to the general fund at Ohio State. I mean, they brought that much money in. Well, football still, they want to use football. You know, the majority of Division I programs lose money. And that's the other thing you got to look at. You know, the Big Ten, which is 18 teams now or whatever it is, you know, they're doing pretty good. They're doing better than they ever did. But the Ohio States of the world, you know, we can agree that there's a big drop-off between Ohio State and Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And their aspirations and everything when it comes to a football program. They can talk all the talk they want, but, you know, it was the Big Two, Little Eight forever. That's not changing. I don't see that changing. And that's why I don't have the big problem. And I agree with you, you know, just, you know, come along for the ride, take the money you're making now. Why do you need more? I mean, you know what I mean? But,
yeah.
But I think all this is going to be mute in the next five to, I don't know. I think if it goes five, I think a super conference has to come around within the next 5 years.
Yeah, I would retract. I'd kick people out, Dom. I would. I'd kick them out of the Big Ten. I don't need to see the game we saw last week. I don't need to see the game we're going to see this week.
Is there even going to be a Big Ten eventually?
Yeah, I think there'll always be a Big Ten. I think there'll always be an SEC, but I don't know how they won't look the way they look now. The SEC might. The SEC really doesn't have to do anything.
Right. Yeah, well, Ohio State should have won after. I mean, not Ohio State. The Big Ten should have won after Texas.
Yes.
Should have gone after Oklahoma, and should have gone after, because that would have created. And I understand at the time why they thought Rutgers was a good move. They wanted that New York market.
Yeah.
But with the way TV and everything's working now, that's all kind of in flux too, with the streaming and all that stuff. And you know, it's the cable boxes are going the way that I think I was the last guy to have a cable box. They told me the my provider said, we no longer do cable. Everything's streaming.
No, I got a cable box. I got six of them.
Well,
I love it.
You're the last of the Mohicans.
I'm the last guy. By the way, Richie Aprile throwing the igloo coolers at Scatino is an all timer.
Yeah. And let me tell you what, let's hope that Petiti's not doing business with the Sopranos and Richie Aprile.
and no offense,
it didn't end well for Richie either, did it, in his kitchen with Tony?
He just wanted his breakfast. That's all he wanted, Janice.
It didn't end well.
No. I mean,
was Tony the greatest actor ever? He could go from like the nicest guy to the serial killer. I mean,
it wasn't him who got Richie. It was Janice.
Well, yeah. Well, she.
All he wanted was his breakfast.
Yeah.
That's all he wanted.
His
breakfast.
Well, it didn't go well, did it?
No, it did not. All right, buddy. I'll talk to you next week.
I'll see you.
Right,
goodbye. You
go. Little Tuesdays with DeBerry. We'll do a little thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We're the highest rated sports radio station in America.
There's no joke there.
We just are.
The Fan,
Ohio's sports destination.
Progressive and
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Up and laugh with the Bob and Tom Show on The Fan 2.
Weekday mornings from 6 to 10.
It says here they've won 5 Marconi Awards. I can't even spell Marconi. The Fan 2. Columbus's home of the Bob and Tom Show.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.
Almost Football Friday. All play and no work.
Sponsored by Tansky Sawmill Toyota.
Your home for football, The Fan. They'll offer betting advice, but don't bet on it being good. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Tuesday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
About 20 minutes ago, ESPN's Shams Charania reported that the Dallas Mavericks are expected to fire general manager Nico Harrison at a 10 a.m. Central Time meeting on Tuesday. So that's about 12 minutes from now. They're going to walk him into a room and say, Nico, you're fired. At least that's Shams reporting. This from yesterday, Mark Stein said that Nico had a special, had this season, a special chair wheeled out for him on top of a staircase that enables him to exit at any point in any Mavericks home game this season. This comes after reports that said Harrison watched most of the Mavericks games last season standing in the tunnel after the Luka Doncic trade. Mavericks, I believe, are 3-7 on the season. Thing or not a thing.
As you're doing that special chair, all I can picture is Dr. Evil with like all of his henchmen sitting around the table, and then Will Ferrell, Mustafa getting hit down. I'm very badly burned. Like that's all I keep coming back to. It was like hitting a button and he falls out of the apparatus. Look, it's one of the most stupefying trades of all time. To not take it to market's crazy. Luka's a top three player in the game. I do think the NBA rigged it, and they got Cooper Flagg, who was really good last night. He went 26-9, but you don't get credit for picking Cooper Flagg. Anybody could have picked Cooper Flagg. So I always think this is an interesting one because somebody in ownership had to approve this. And it wasn't Mark Cuban. It was the new ownership that approved this deal. And why in the hell would you do that? Why would you do that? So there were a lot of things that could have stopped that deal from happening. Inevitably, it's going to fall at his feet because he's the one whose brainchild it was. But it's the whole thing was it was stupefying in the moment. It still is now.
I think this is a predictable thing. I think we all saw this writing on the wall when he made that trade, whether it was owner directive or not to try to get a new stadium or move out of Dallas, whatever it was. And then you thought maybe it could be saved, right? Because they lucked into the number one pick in Cooper Flagg. But it has not been a good start to the season for the Mavericks, so a very predictable thing.
For what it's worth, Flagg, I guess this would have just been... he missed a jump shot with 1 second remaining. I was trying to look at the Mavericks schedule last night, and so Bobby Portis put the Milwaukee Bucks up 4. Flagg misses the three-point jump, so really wouldn't have mattered, but Dallas is 3-8 on the season. Sticking with the association, the Orange County Register reported that LeBron James is expected to join the G League's South Bay squad for practice later this week as part of his ramp-up towards a Lakers season debut. James has been cleared for contact while recovering from sciatica on his right side. He's now entering the final stages of that return to play. Thing or not a thing?
It's a massive thing that he's still effective at this age. I think what I'm most curious about is, have you guys been paying attention? Probably not, but and I don't blame you. There's a lot going on, and it's well down on my radar as well. But are you aware, like, of what Doncic and Austin Reeves have been doing, the two of them? So Doncic has played in, I think, 6 games. No, he's played in 7 games. He is averaging 37, 9.5, and 9. In 7 games. If you're saying, well, that's pretty good, well, I'm going to tell you what Austin Reeves is doing. Austin Reeves is averaging 39 assists and 5 rebounds. So when LeBron James comes in, he's a role player. How does he respond to that? We've never seen him do it.
It'll be a fascinating one. You're right, because Lakers are 8-3.
Yeah, they're winning. Those two are great. Like, and he's going to jump ahead of Reeves, obviously. He's not going to be behind Reeves as a third wheel, but like, even as the second wheel behind Luka, what does that even look like? We've never seen LeBron James not be ball dominant.
Yeah, that's going to be a very interesting thing to see how this, the dynamic of all this fits for the Lakers and how it all works out. I think they're going to the G League. It's a pretty cool thing that he can do that. And I believe Bronny's down there, right? So him and
Bronny's at the big club.
Oh, he is on the big club.
Oh, sure,
this year.
Sure,
okay.
sure.
I thought maybe he'd get some practice time in there with his son and hang out a little bit. Maybe do it like a Major League Baseball. Get him a rehab stint. Get him a couple games down there.
Rehab start. I don't think he's going to play for South Bay.
I was looking. Yeah, Bronny James was a DNP last night against the Charlotte Hornets, but he was on the bench. As of right now, Emmanuel Clase is not in federal custody, but Luis Ortiz is. On Sunday, federal prosecutors revealed that Clase and Ortiz had been charged with fraud, conspiracy, and bribery, stemming from the scheme to rig pitches that would make gamblers hundreds of thousands of dollars. Ortiz was arrested Sunday morning. He appeared in court yesterday. The allegations are that Clase arranged with the bettor as early as May 2023 to throw specific pitches for balls so the gambler could place prop bets and profit. Ortiz allegedly joined the scheme in June of 2025. Mm. Between the two, gamblers won at least $450,000. Clase and Ortiz were given kickbacks for their participation. Both face up to 20 years in prison for the wire fraud conspiracy, 20 years for the money laundering, and 5 years for conspiracy to influence sports betting events by bribery. This is a long time in prison. Again, Clase not in federal custody as of right now. Both men should lead when they get off the Guardians' books, $7.2 million for 2026 for the Guardians. Thing or not a thing?
It's a massive thing. It's a complete failure of an intelligence test in the biggest way possible. He's making about $4.5 million a year, and he's worried about kickbacks and this stuff. And I'll pose this to you, Reese, because you're the Guardians fan among us. Do you not think about the 2024 postseason?
All the time.
I mean, like, don't you wonder? Like,
yes,
he was unhittable, and then he just got bombed. I mean, I would think about that
especially in those kind of games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it almost sounded like from reading this that they were like Ortiz was the one throwing the pitches and Clase was facilitating it, but they obviously were both involved here. 65 years.
Oof.
In a federal prison.
You're a major league player, man.
These guys are looking at bye-bye to your career, whether you get
your
those
life.
65 years or not. It was just insane. Like, Clase's texting this dude in the bullpen when they're not supposed to be texting. And the one time they have record of there was supposed to be a ball and the batter swung at it. And the guy was texting him, like, this is not going to be good. And he texted back like a crying face emoji. And oh my goodness, what a web.
What a mess. Ryan Day at the podium coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We've been your Jackets flagship station since day one. All the goals, all the action, all the memories. Your home for the Columbus Blue Jackets, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Hey, what's up? It's Tebow.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Happy Veterans Day. I'm Eric Reeser. This update sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Get a holiday loan from BMI Federal Credit Union and choose a loan amount from $1,000 to $5,000. BMIFCU.org/holiday loan. Number one, Ohio State looks to remain at the top of the college football playoff. The second set of rankings will be released tonight at 7. Rothman and Ice will host a CFP watch-along tonight on the Fans YouTube channel. OSU will host UCLA Saturday night at 7:30. Head coach Ryan Day will speak with the media in moments. We'll carry those comments live on The Fan when Coach Day takes the podium. On the field tonight, Ohio University and Western Michigan look to remain at the top of the Mid-American Conference. More on that in a bit, but we go now to the Woody Hayes Athletic Center and head coach Ryan Day.
This is a live feed of Ryan Day's weekly press conference, sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
In the playoff game here, and you know, I'm watching him play the last few weeks, and man, he's physical, he runs hard, he takes some shots, and he keeps coming back. And he's a competitor, man. I got a lot of respect for him as a player. He throws, he's got a strong arm. And, you know, he's been doing a lot for his team. And you watch him on the field, he's a warrior. So, you know, we'll take all that into consideration, just, you know, and look at everything. But we know this is a great challenge for our team. And, you know, it starts with him.
Ryan, lots of things happening on the recruiting side of things. It seems like maybe there's been a change of philosophy as far as the size of this 26 class in the last month or so. Can you just speak to what really is motivating that now, you know, with, 25 commits and a handful of guys still out there? Like, how high do you see this going, and what is the driving force behind that?
Well, we're trying to make sure that we're in a good place, obviously, with our roster as we head into December. And then you have the portal, and with that, there's, you know, a lot of challenges. As you know, you have retention, and then you have, you know, guys who are at other schools, and we want to make sure that we're continually recruiting high school players that we can develop. And there's a little bit, you know, based on how far we go this season and what happens, that will adjust sort of how we end up getting to our number at the end of the year. But you know, we want to make sure that, you know, we're flush at all areas. And that's at, you know, at the high end, you know, in terms of like the starters and the older guys, and then certainly with the young guys as we're developing them. So we want to make sure that you know, this, the way that we're building the roster is the right way, and a lot of it has to do with you know, the high school guys coming in. So we're trying to project it the best we can, but obviously it's floating around and it's a moving target.
Related to the one portal window, maybe like kind of requiring you to add more in high school ranks.
Yeah, I think that's the case, because you can't be short. And I've said it before, I mean, whoever, you know, plays past when the portal closes, you know, late into the season, is going to really be at a disadvantage, because there's no way to replace those guys once the five-day window opens after the final game. So, you know, we all have to make sure that, you know, we're not short. That's our job. So we're going to make sure that, you know, we're in good shape here and we're flush.
Right, I'm first of all, any update on Josh, but then also a lot of different guys got a chance to play at that guard spot between Gabe and Ethan, maybe that we haven't seen. And I know when you guys first got him, there was an idea of what he was projected to be, and that hasn't necessarily worked out here. Just an update on where his development is, and maybe is he an option along with Josh to be a guy at that right guard spot?
Yeah, he's an option. He played in the game, and I thought he had some good movement in the run game and did some good things. So we'll see how this week goes, but we're going to keep pushing the envelope on it and keep grinding on it. But he did have some good snaps in that game, and hopefully we can get him to play at a certain level that we need him to play in order to, you know, finish the season the way we want to. Josh, you know, we're expecting a full week from Josh. We'll see how today goes. But, you know, he and Phil both, you know, we'll kind of see as the week goes on, but we're expecting a full week of work out of those guys.
I think there was a notion that in June with recruiting, maybe things didn't pop quite the way people were hoping they would in terms of commitments. Now that is happening. Is there anything you feel like you guys have a better grasp on now than you did then that's allowing that to happen? Or is there anything strategic about not taking guys in the summer and kind of taking them now?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a philosophy. Not that, you know, we're not trying to get good players, but I think a couple things come into play. One, we, you know, there's going to be changes in college football year in and year out. That's the first thing, based on how guys play, based on coaching staffs, based on a lot of things. The second part of it is the evaluation of their senior year. So when you take those two things into consideration, the projection was that last spring it was going to be we were going to be a lot different place in November and December than we were in June. And I think the biggest part is we had more information about the players, because with the amount of resources that we're investing in these young men nowadays, you better be right. That's the most important thing. You know, in the past, you could bring in whoever you wanted. Maybe they were ranked high or whatever. If they didn't work out, you know, they didn't play, or, you know, maybe it took 3 or 4 years for them to get on the field, or maybe they tried another school. You can't have bad investments anymore. I mean, it's really important. This is critical decisions. And so we want to make sure that we're, you know, turning over every stone and making sure we're right in our decisions. Not that it's 100%, but we got to do our part and do our due diligence to make sure that when we evaluate these guys, we have all the information that we possibly can to do what's right. So by the university.
Brian, what do you think has allowed Arvell to be as impactful this year in his first year as a starter? I mean, just to go from being a backup to somebody they're talking about as long-term.
Right. I think the first thing is that Arvell, you see this in guys when they get into the, you know, year three, sometimes year four, but where, you know, the program, you know, kind of kicks in. What I mean by that is, like, all the work that they've done up to that point, it all starts to come together. And I think you see that with a lot of our guys. But in particular with Arvell, he was a very productive player in high school. Coach Ginn did a great job of bringing him along and you know, providing a mindset of what it means to be a Buckeye. And that's critical, what it means to play at Ohio State. And Arvell has that mindset. He had the minute he walked in the door. And I think Arvell never gets distracted with, like, noise. He just focuses on what matters. And that's a unique trait. We were talking about this the other day. You know, maybe there's talk about him with awards, or maybe there's talk about him in the draft. That doesn't affect Arvell. Arvell just focuses on what matters. And again, it starts with a mindset. But I think early in his career, you know, he could have very easily, you know, been discouraged because maybe he didn't play as much early on. We moved to D-line for a couple months, and all those things helped him. And then he sat and watched Cody, he watched Sonny. And now his athletic ability, his mindset, and now, you know, the understanding of what goes on in that room and what James has done in terms of, you know, just the football IQ in that room is allowing him to play at a high level. And I think all that combines to what you're seeing on the field.
His skill set to be on the end as a head rusher, to be an off-ball linebacker, have you had players like that much before here? Just how does his skill set, the variety of it compare?
Right. I mean, he's... Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think if there's been somebody I've been around that has that type of a skill set, as talented as Arvell. Probably not. I mean, and Sonny's right there, too. Both of those guys have that ability and that versatility. And I'd have to go back and think, but, you know, they're right there at the top.
Coach, you often talk about the outside noise and dealing with it. Obviously, you know, the kids see the post, they see the stuff. I mean, you've got numerous players being mentioned for huge honors. What do you say to them? Because it is exciting to have their names mentioned. And do you feel like the university should promote the guys at all for those awards?
Well, I think the number one goal is to win, and for team goals, winning championships. And if the guys understand that, then I think it's great to promote that. I think if we started to feel like we have a bunch of guys that are self-promoters or that are playing the game to try to get statistics and get awards, then I don't think that we should focus on that. And we're not focused on that. But I think our guys understand that if you win as a team, then everybody's going to do well. And I think that's the case. I think you can see that with Jeremiah. You can see that with Julian. They both are pulling for each other. I think the way that our guys, you know, lift up their teammates, that all matters. So if I started to feel like it was becoming an individual thing, then yeah, we'd probably put a stop to it. But I think this is a team who understands, you know, how important it is to win as a team and not individually. And that's a message that we've been talking about for a long time, about being unselfish. And the best team in the country is going to win. And once selfishness starts to kick in, that's players and coaches included, that's when we get distracted. And, you know, obviously it's my job to keep a close eye on that.
Big hits by the secondary. Caleb had another one earlier on Saturday. How important is that physical brand of football for those guys?
Yeah, setting the tone, especially early in the game. I mean, it's the one difference about football than any other sport. And you got to set the tone early in the game and let them know you're there. And that's a part of our brand. That's a part of our identity, is playing physical. And you know, whether it's guys running and hitting, winning at the line of scrimmage, finishing guys downfield, you know, that's what we want. That's, we come in here on Sundays and watch the clips. I mean, those are the first ones that we show. Those are our culture clips. Starts in preseason, and it's got to go all the way throughout the season. Because if that's our identity, it's got to be that way every week. And so that's it. And this time of year, we got to be seeking contact. You know, we got to be hunting it up.
Ryan, when we talk about pace of play and the pace you guys go at, it's still too many fish on offense. When you have, sometimes when you have a young quarterback or young backs, maybe that efficiency doesn't line up. What's been the key for those guys to still be able to play as efficient at that slow pace?
Yeah, it's. I think we had over 70 plays this past week, so that was great to get. And the defense, I think, had 37 going into the last drive. So there's a lot of good there. But I think, you know, it's kind of the way you know, we operate. You know, we operate out of the huddle. And I think when you look at it from the beginning of the season, you know, you look at it from a 20,000-foot view and you say, well, you know, we can cut down on the number of plays to keep our team healthy and fresh towards the end of the season. That's important. But once you kind of get in their rhythm of huddling, you get used to that. And the guys get comfortable with that as opposed to the other part of it. But we also need to be able to do that when we need to do it. And when I say need to, you know, it's based on what's going on with the game. You know, we're not all of a sudden just going to go tempo because, like, we just want to go tempo. It has to give us an advantage. And when we're on the same page and we're being efficient in what we're doing and we're executing at a high level, like, that's what's most important, period. And so, you know, we're still chasing that. We're not there. But changing the tempo does help. Or if you find yourself in a situation like we did in a two-minute drill, we have to play on the ball. That's good. It keeps defenses, you know, on their heels a little bit as a changeup. So, you know, we'll keep looking at it. But we're not just going to do it to do it. I think, quite honestly, you know, for the most part, the defenses and defensive coordinators really have caught up to just playing tempo all the time. They can see your formation and call your defense based on how you line up. And so that's where the coach to player communication sort of changed things. And all those things have combined to where we're at right now, and that's why we focus so much on efficiency. But we also want to be really explosive as well. So get back to work today and get after it.
I don't pretend to be a coach. I don't know what the scheme is on certain plays, but when I watched the game again, it looked like there were times that the offensive line just didn't block somebody. Somebody came off the edge. I don't know. Again, I don't know the scheme.
Sure.
And there were times that they just didn't get pushed. What's your kind of analysis or evaluation of the offensive line at this point?
Yeah, good question. I think there's two plays in particular where we had a free runner. And Bo, man, what two great runs he had on third down, man. The first one was what we call free safety mix. So the Will blitz and the free safety came into the B gap. We had, you know, David in there tight. He usually handles any fourth defender over here. You know, they did a nice job. They hit it inside, so David couldn't quite get to him. So that's a scheme issue. We actually blocked it pretty well because once Bo kind of broke the tackle, he ended up making some yards there. And there was a couple others like that, you know, and you know, give them credit. They did a nice job with a couple of those things. I thought, you know, we did overall handle some of that. Was a lot of movement up there. We early on, we ran a stretch play that Austin didn't quite get to the second level. The next time we ran the same one, he got to the second level on the same blitz. Got to the backer and it turned into an explosive run. So one of the things about the run game is, you know, it does take time to take effect. We certainly wish that, you know, the first play, you know, would have been, you know, part of our day, but it wasn't. So we had to regroup and come back after it. But, like, we're just going to keep swinging on it. And, you know, it comes down to fundamentals. That's it. So, you know, we'll keep trying to figure out ways to be creative and create space and create explosion. But, like, when it all comes down to the end, it's going to come down to fundamentals. And so, but yeah, I think there's positives, but there's also things we got to get better at.
Last year, you know, all the changes on the, you've been pretty stable, obviously, Phillip missed last week. Had you hoped that the line would be more consistent than it's been to this point?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I always want to be more consistent, yeah. But I can't sit here and say I'm disappointed right now. I'm encouraged with a lot of things that are going on up there. And I, you know, if I thought it was, you know, a real problem or a mess, I would address it. I know that we're going to get A lot more challenges here, and we're challenging these guys every day. And you know, the backs need to continue to run better, and we need to keep continue to figure out ways to put them in a situation to be successful. And the angles of the blocks, we've got to keep working on that. But no, I mean, I think they're grinding on it. They're working hard. Two of the guys graded out a champion. The other guys didn't. You know, we upped our ante on being a champion. It used to be over 80. You know, this past week, now we're 83% because we feel like we need to, you know, increase our efficiency and execution. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of good there, but certainly, you know, we know what we need to, you know, get in terms of winning a championship. So we want all those guys to grade out over 83%.
Right, you guys at times tried different things. It looked like, I know you got asked about that a little bit after the game, but defensively, like, I think first third downs, you didn't have defensive tackles on there. You bring Justin in, you hand off to Nate. Just, is that something where at this point of the season, you have it, you might as well use it, put it on film? What's the thinking on just adding some new things here in November?
Well, I think part of it is you try to put guys in a situation to be successful. I think when you looked at the group we had on the field, that was a pretty twitchy group we had. And you figure out where it goes. Sometimes it's a little bit of a laboratory to figure out, you know, once they're in that moment, what does it look like? You try to project. Some things are great. I thought, like, you know, our package with Lincoln was well thought out, you know, and what went on with that. Sometimes you do it and it doesn't work out the way you thought it would work out. But I think this time of year it's more about putting the people in the right positions to be successful. And then, like you said, having curveballs and changeups are good. And then sometimes, you know, they're good for one or two shots. Sometimes, you know, you come back and you build off of that package, and then it kind of goes from there. So I think you can tell on both sides of the ball, you know, we just look a little different than maybe we did last year, you know, from formations to alignments to fronts to coverages.
Right. The running game takes a while over the course of the game, also over the course of the season. Looks like you've got four running backs right now that are running with energy and will. Are you seeing that same thing? And if that continues, do you need to pare it down?
Well, I think they all – CJ's the most veteran there. You know, the other guys, like, you know, Bo didn't – you know, actually didn't play a whole bunch of running back actually in high school, and then he got hurt, you know, late in the season. So, like, he hasn't played a ton of football. Isaiah West, you know, was injured, you know, his senior year. You know, James didn't really get a lot of carries last year, so the same thing with him his senior year. And so these guys haven't, you know, played a lot of football. So the more carries we can get them, the more we can get them into the game, the better. The good news is, to your point, that, you know, we have four of them, where there's been seasons where we've had two and then one of them gets hurt, and, you know, like, it's a scramble. So I think we've done a good job of that. And the more they play, the more they're getting comfortable. And I thought that group took a step, even though maybe it only looked like a little step to everybody. There was a lot of things that I saw they took a step on. I thought the two runs by Bo and the short yardage situations were excellent. I mean, that was a free guy in the hole. But that's how Quinshon looked last year, you know. You know, some of the explosive runs that we got with Trey last year, it was good to see Bo hit one. We had got called back, but that's what we're looking for. And then obviously in pass protection, I thought CJ did a nice job picking up a couple of blitzes. So, but that's it, man. When you have a young room like that, you got to keep getting them out there, getting experience, and then got to keep growing and not make the same mistake over and over again. So, and then trying to identify are there schemes that they do better in than others, and that's the day to day grind we're on.
Ryan, I know you don't like to single guys out and leave somebody out of the conversation, but with all the rotation and different reps that young guys got last week, is there anyone that comes to mind immediately for you that exceeded what you thought they might provide on Saturday, and how that might be different down the stretch for them now?
Yeah, not so much. I think some of the guys maybe that hadn't played as much, maybe like some of the non-starters. Like, I thought Peyton Pierce was excellent in the game. He's playing well on special teams. This is a guy who, you know, was a high school wrestler and you know, just really has taken the next step, I think, and is a productive player for us, as you guys can see. Diagnosis plays well. Really serious about his business. Tough guy, you know. Really smart. I thought Bryson Rodgers played well. And we need some guys to step up at receiver. And so really, really good to see him. You know, he made some nice blocks. He made a couple nice catches. So hopefully that can build him some momentum and him some confidence moving forward. In terms of other young guys, it was good to see Ian Moore in his first start play well. I mean, that when you don't notice somebody, that's a good sign of tackle. And you know, we didn't really notice Ian too much. And a lot of good. You know, I think, full disclosure, you know, he's so used to practicing. I think that there were times where at, you know, the last 10 to 20% of the play, he's kind of programmed to sort of shut it down, where you got to play the whole play. But like overall, it's a heck of a start. And so hopefully, again, that's another guy that now can build some confidence. I guess probably those are the guys that stuck out. Yeah, that's probably it.
Ryan, at defensive tackle, first of all, is Taiwan on track to get back into action after this week? And then, Edrick got the start. What did you think of Edrick, his first start in a while? And also, it looked like Jason Moore at the end of the game had some good reps. Yeah. Do you see that as like an option to start to maybe get some reps here?
I would love to, yeah. And it was good to see him flash. Now he needs to be more consistent. You're talking about Jason Moore, somebody who, you know, again, it's another guy that we'd love to see take the next step. He can do it. You've seen him do it physically. Now can he consistently do it, which is what I think Edrick has now, you know, kind of learned to do. Just, you know, maybe not as much drama, just going out there and playing and playing the next snap. And that's the sign of his maturity, you know. This is a guy who just lights up a room when he walks in a room. You know, Edrick is a great young man. He's got a lot of talent, and he's learning how this all works. And, you know, once he made the transition inside, what that comes with. And, you know, he's had ups and downs a little bit this year, but, like, you're starting to see him play his best football. And I think the maturity and the preparation and what he's doing is paying off. And I think, you know, he's going to be a big player for us. And then in Taiwan, yeah, we felt like it was just – could he have played? Yes. But we decided to hold him. Yeah, so expecting a full week of work out of him, too.
You talk about how you and Julian, when he comes off the field, you have good conversations about what he sees. I'm curious how you've seen that grow over, you know, what's now been 9 games of his career. And then off the field, once you get back and watch the film, how has he been able to diagnose areas that he gets set up?
I think once you start playing games with somebody and you spend more time with them and you see him on the field, you give him the benefit of the doubt. In terms of what he's thinking, and he's not quite there yet, but like I understand now that like he is putting the preparation in. I kind of understand how his mind works, and you know, there's certain times where, you know, you gotta bark at him to make sure that, you know, he's locked in. You know what I mean? As a young player, but like I see a guy who is locked in a lot, so like I don't kind of over that stage, and now it's more about the football. And what he's seeing, the decisions he's making, and the preparation, and making sure that he's focused and locked in and concentrating on each situation and what comes with it. And as the scheme continues to increase week in and week out, you know, how important every single play is. And then just what it takes to execute each play and making great decisions. And then having the toughness to lead the team as we, you know, get into these bigger games as the season, you know, comes to an end. That's kind of where we are, and he's doing great in terms of his preparation, his mindset.
It might seem a little silly, but do you want him to have the confidence to sometimes make the throws? I know it was an interception against Purdue, but where he feels he can fit things into tight windows, or do you want him to take a step back at times as a young quarterback?
I think that's the art of playing quarterback, and you know, if you could tell somebody that, you know, it'd be a lot easier. You know, it's just there's so many moving parts, and after playing the position, like I understand, like, you know, and just that, like, if you're talking about that one play in particular, like, you know, in that situation, we had a 17-play drive, and, like, they're dropping 8. There's really no room in there. Like, you probably got to check the ball down or run, and, you know, maybe we play 4th down or maybe we kick the field goal. But, there's just so many bodies in the end zone when it's a 3-man rush that gets really hard. And if you're going to make that throw, it's got to be, like, really tall, top shelf, where only he can catch it. But, like, those are the things that, you know, it's so hard to replicate, and you got to learn, like, but he knew it. The minute he knew it, he knew it. He came right over, and that wasn't a situation where, you start barking at somebody. You just, you know, because he knows, you know, nobody want to take care of the ball better than him in that moment. So, but then, you know, if you overdo it, then all of a sudden guys get paralyzed. They don't let it rip. So, you know, you got to let it rip, man. And every once in a while, bad things are going to happen. You got to come back from it. And I think to his credit, you know, he's kind of always stayed even keeled in that area. Again, bigger challenges ahead, but that's kind of where he's at.
going back to the right guard spot, as you're looking for consistency there, how close is Josh, I guess, assuming his health, how close is he to earning a start in that spot or getting consecutive drives to see what that looks like for him?
Yeah, I think right now, where we stand right now, it's we're going to kind of like split the duty up there. But who knows? That might change later today. Josh is going to get healthy. We'll see how even Ethan does today. But that's kind of where we kind of feel like we are right now. And we feel like splitting the reps can help them, all those guys, become more efficient. But we're going to keep evaluating, keep pushing on it, and see where we go. And a big part of it is how healthy Josh is.
Talk about the offensive line player earlier. You mentioned David. Who
are
you talking about there?
No, David Adolph. He was at the receiver position for that play. Yeah.
Brian, when it comes to recruiting, what kind of value do you find in terms of positionless players, maybe guys that can do a bunch of different things on a field, on offense or defense?
That's another thing I think that is like, not to give away trade secrets, but I think nowadays, if you're just a one position only guy, you better be elite, you know. And so, if you're an offensive lineman that can play, you know, guard and tackle, or you know, you're a receiver, you know, that can block and run, you know, or you know, if you're a you know, a linebacker that can play on the edge, or you're a nickel that can play corner or safety that can play down, like all those things come into play. Because you know the versatility is important, because we know this roster is every year is getting shorter and shorter. We're going to get to, you know, just over 100 people on the team, and so that means everybody has to have versatility. That means guys who are on the field and also scout team guys. So anybody that, you know, we're bringing into the program, we want to have some versatility. I think you can see by maybe some of the guys that, you know, we're adding to the roster here, even over the last month, you know, they can do multiple things, and I think that's important. You know, guys like Xavier Johnson, like think about how many roles he played. A guy like Mitch Rossi, you know, these guys, they became very important in those seasons because they could do multiple things. And so the more guys like that that we can have in the program, I think the better off we're going to be.
Ryan, when you're talking about maybe working in more guys on defense, different guys on defense, if you look last year behind your 11 starters on defense, the next six guys in number of snaps were Jermaine Matthews, Kenyatta Jackson, Caden Curry, Arvell Reese, Caden McDonald, and Lorenzo Styles, who are all starting this year. If you're playing other guys, is it mostly about keeping guys fresh for this year, or are you thinking ahead to next year for development, retention, that we also want to build the next group of starters?
I think a couple of things. I think the first thing is, the first thing you're thinking about is development for this year, developing depth. What is it going to look like when you're putting you in a game, in a Big Ten game? You know, what does it look like in those moments? It's one thing what we see in practice, but it's another thing to actually do it in the game. So that's the first thing we're trying to evaluate. And the second thing is, like, to your point, like, where are we going? You know, what's this looking like in the next 2 to 3 years? In each game, we'll go through and we'll take a look at the guys and see how they do and try to figure in all these decisions on, you know, guys coming into the program, retention, all of that, and then try to project out the best we can based on what we see. And as you can imagine, there's a lot of conversation. He just needs more reps. You know, his awareness is excellent. You know, we can see a projection over here. Look at this. You know, maybe, you know, in a different type of scheme or a different type of, you know, play, he could do these types of, like, we're all trying to figure those things out. Where we feel like with the older guys, we have a pretty good feel for that, which is why we've adapted on both sides of the ball.
All right, Coach, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
You've been listening to the Ryan Day Press Conference on The Fan.
Sponsored by The Roofing Guys. For all your roofing, siding, and gutter needs, contact The Roofing Guys at theroofingguys.com.
All right, I got to give proper credit on this. I think it was Ryan. Yeah, it was Ryan. He had the under at 11. He set the over-under at 11:29:30. I liked the under on that, and we're under it. We're in under 11:29. So great. That's an unbelievable line out of him. And it felt like it was going to be under to me. And the reason I thought it would be under, and we're new to this. We're not Rothman or Ice. We don't have the habits of doing this every single week. It's rare that we get 11 o'clock press conference here on the show. But the reason I thought it would be under is because I didn't think there'd be that many questions about UCLA. Now, I didn't think there wouldn't be any questions about UCLA. because there was not a one. Ryan's opening statement touched on Nico Amalieva and the fact that he was here last year at Tennessee. That's it. That's the list. And if that doesn't tell you where we're at with not only this team, but with this league, I don't know what does. That is a game week press conference on campus. Not a single question was asked about this week's opponent. Not one.
I also don't know, did they touch on Carnell Tate at all?
I didn't hear that.
A lot of talk on the offensive line.
I think the Carnell Tate thing is just precaution. I think we all realize that was just kind of precaution, which sure. Again speaks to these opponents they're playing.
But do we know any specifics about where on the lower body we think this is?
I just think if they were playing Michigan, he plays.
Oh, for sure. Like 100%. You know? But I just wonder, this did feel like a bye week press conference.
It felt like a spring press conference, guys. Sure. There were three of the first four questions are about recruiting. There were a total of six recruiting questions.
Which is important considering what happens next, or what's, I guess, scheduled to happen next month, and then what's supposed to happen in January, but there's a little clarity on any of it.
Jeez.
I think all the guys would have played, right? And bad on us. Nobody talked about Taiwan Malone not playing. I didn't even realize Taiwan Malone didn't play last week. And Ryan Day says they held him out as precautionary reason. Honestly, there really wasn't a question about Purdue either. There might have been a question about certain players and what they did in the Purdue game, but really no questions about last week's game either, which is fascinating. All the recruiting questions. I'm sure I missed one or two. I've got us at 20 questions in that press conference. UCLA was not mentioned once outside of Ryan's beginning opening statement, Bo, where you said he was talking about Nico.
That's it. It felt like a bi-week press conference. It felt like, honestly, it felt like spring to me. It felt like Ryan's available in spring. Let's get some recruiting stuff in. I know there's a signing day coming in December. I get it. And I understand why asking those questions. They're asking them because it's more interesting than talking about the opponent. I mean, this is a binary business, guys. Are you interesting or not? Is what you're talking about interesting or not? And it's not interesting to ask questions about Big Ten opponents, because the Big Ten opponents in the month of November, save for the one that happened 2 weeks ago and the one that's going to happen at the end, are Bush League. That's the reality. You are 31.5-point favorites over UCLA.
It's gone
you
up a point.
You took them because USC begged you to take them so that they had a dance partner out west. And so now you're stuck with them, and they're not any good. They're not going to be any good anytime soon, and this is what it is. And you're going to do this. You're going to do this song and dance last. Now, we didn't have the press conference during our show last week for Purdue, but my hunch is it would have been pretty similar. And my hunch is the only real Purdue questions probably had to do with Max Clair. Very little about Purdue as an operation. There aren't going to be any Rutgers comments, talking points next week. What are you going to talk about with Rutgers?
And I think it's interesting, Bo, and I feel like we kind of answer. We're almost answering our question from earlier in the show, right? Mm-hmm. Because we want to fight for the Big Ten, and we want it to be better, and we want to get four Big Ten teams in this playoff. But yet, we don't even ask about the upcoming opponent, because this string of opponents we have really don't matter.
No, it's I think a couple other things that stood out to me. And this goes back to like the old days, like when AR and I would do Translating Tress. That's a long time ago, but we used to do Translating Tress, and we would try to decipher. We changed it to Urban Intelligence because then it was like, it was so direct that you didn't really have to read into it. But Tress, you kind of had to dig and look for things. I thought two things jumped out to me. I thought the way that he talked about Bo Jackson and CJ tells you how he views the running back room. And that it's when it matters, it's going to be those two. And a heavy dose of 25. The way he talked glowingly about a couple of those runs he had when there was a guy unblocked in the hole and he made a miss and picked up positive yardage. And even the one at the beginning of the game that gets called back, like that type of explosives. He evoked the name Quinshon Judkins in talking about Bo Jackson. That's high, high praise, obviously. So it tells me that when you get to the Michigan week and beyond, it'll be 25 and 12. 12 will be short yardage and then 25. And the only thing Bo probably has to get better at is a little bit of the pass pro. Like he had a whiff on that in the game against Purdue, and he's got to get that cleaned up. But Ryan even addressed that. He said, look, he didn't play much running back. Hadn't. So that's a little bit of a factor there. The other thing that jumped out to me was the way he talked about Julian and the interception. And the fact that they dropped eight, rush three, that's one of the ones we got to check it down, or it's got to be high. But he goes, I don't have to bark at him. Like, he knows what he did, and he learned from it. And it hit me that because of the way that this schedule has played out, I think I know what Julian Sain is and how great he is, and that if he doesn't win the Heisman this year, he's probably going to win it next year. But we won't really know. I mean, no, for sure, until Ann Arbor. It's such a weird thing. Like, his first test was massive against one of the best defenses in the country at home against Texas, and he played brilliantly. He outplayed the Heisman favorite in that game. Outplayed him. He was great at Washington. He's great every single week. But because of the way that the schedule has played out, he hasn't really had, like, fourth quarter adversity, third quarter adversity since week one. And really then he didn't have adversity. Like, he played nearly perfect. So how does it feel how does he respond if he throws a red zone interception in the third quarter of the game? What's that response? And unfortunately for him and us and Ryan and everybody, we won't know it until, and God forbid it doesn't happen, but until something like that happens, whether it's in the Michigan game or in the Indiana game. That's kind of when you're going to have an idea of how he responds to it, because unfortunately the schedule just didn't provide it.
Some moments I think were provided, like a third and five where he converts with his legs, dancing around two Penn State defenders. So you think maybe that can copy and paste on the field at the Big House, but it's just a whole different animal. Everything about November 29th is going to be something he's never faced before in his football, in his life. I mean, so many of these guys have an idea kind of what this is going to mean on the 29th, but just having played such little football in the collegiate level, like you talk about Bo Jackson, Arvell Reese, I mean, nobody has any idea.
Bo, I love that. I like that you talked about the translating tress, and we've talked about this before with Ryan. Mm-hmm. He usually doesn't volunteer stuff unless we're going to see it. I thought it was interesting, a couple of things he said, how they're truly ramping up for the end of this thing. Mm-hmm. They upped the champion grade. It's no longer 80 if you want to be a champion the rest of the way. It's good. It's 83% to be a champion.
Nice.
He also talked about adding things in and putting guys in positions to succeed. Mm-hmm. And some of the stuff that you saw last week, I'm not so sure. When you said that the Noah Roberts handoff, you're not going to do that in the Michigan game, I'm not so sure we're not going to see that. He also mentioned the Lincoln package. I'm guessing we might see that moving forward here in games that matter. And the other thing he talked about, and you touched on this a little bit, he talked about Bo Jackson in those short yard situations. Mm-hmm. I wonder if we'll see more of 25 down on the goal line rather than 12.
Yeah, I think you'll see. My hunch is that you're going to see 25 and 12 primarily. The Keenholz package, I don't think you're going to hand it to a tight end again at the goal line again. I don't think that's going to be it. I could think you could see that package, but perhaps another player in that spot. And I think a lot of this stuff is giving Michigan stuff to think about, too. I think it's a little gimmicky. It's kind of my only critique of this group is just the short red zone stuff. And we're taking a molehill and making a mountain out of it. I get it. But that's kind of the only thing that you look at and go, I don't know about that. Do we really need to do that? You know, the one thing we haven't seen much in the red zone? Slants and fades to Jeremiah inside the six. Don't you think you could do that anytime you wanted?
Every damn time.
This is the most accurate quarterback we've ever seen here. He's the most accurate quarterback in college football. You telling me he can't get a snap and throw it to a spot in the air that only four can get it? And who on the planet, I ask you, could defend Jeremiah Smith on a high point ball? Who on the planet? Forget college football. Who in the NFL could defend him on a high point ball?
17, too.
Yeah, either one. Either one. But four is a cheat code. Couldn't you just do that anytime you wanted? I know you don't want to live that way, but we haven't seen it this year. We saw one slant to him. I want to say, was it the Illinois game? There was a slant to him, maybe. But it hasn't. It just hasn't happened because it's not needed. But if you're playing in Ann Arbor and you're inside the six and I see him over there, throw it where only he can catch it. Julian?
I was thinking maybe Kyle Hamilton.
Like, geez.
Maybe is Kyle, it yeah, okay, on fine. The planet?
And so, all-pro safety. I mean, like, it's a short list, you know, of people who can handle it. I mean, Julian is so accurate. He's like that. Reese, you might be too young. There was a great live-action Disney series when my dad was a kid, Davy Crockett, right? And there's a great scene in one of the live action ones where they're doing a shooting contest and the guy shoots at a target and then Davy goes next and he shoots through the guy's hole in the target. That's Julian. That's how accurate he is. Like he does that. That's how accurate it is. So I feel like you could use that anytime you want. If you're curious why all the recruiting stuff, other than the obvious that the opponent is boring, the reality is that National Signing Day is coming up, and this is pretty stunning, and this probably deserves a longer conversation maybe tomorrow. Ohio State currently has 25 commitments, and they're not done. Okay, so they have 25 and they're not done, which means this could approach 30. It's been a minute since Ohio State has had 30 commitments or anything in the vicinity of 30 commitments at this point, right? So, but his answer to that was roster depth, and they didn't want to get stuck because they're going to be in the playoff and their roster is going to get poached and there's no way for them to recoup that because they're playing in the playoff, which speaks to how broken all of this is. The other thing I would say on this that's pretty stunning, and I haven't been paying attention to this. Can you guys, I'm going to give you the top four players in the country, according to 24/7 Sports, two quarterbacks and an edge and a wide receiver. The number one quarterback is committed to Tennessee. The number two player and the number two quarterback is committed to Houston. The number three player and the number one defensive end is committed to Maryland. And the number one wide receiver and the number four player overall is committed to Tennessee. People are upfronting big paydays to get high school kids to sign on the line, which is dotted. I would not want to be in those waters too much if I were Ohio State, because the idea of paying defensive linemen multiple million dollars to sign, there's just not a lot of path for that paying off big time. And Tennessee just did this with Nico, and they're doing it again at the top. Think about that. Houston has the number two quarterback in the country.
Tennessee did it last year with David Sanders, the left tackle that Ohio State was in on. And that's the beauty of what Ohio State's doing, is they're not playing in those waters, right? They're getting the kids that want to be developed, that want to be the next Jeremiah Smith, that are not worried about money as the number one thing. They're getting those kids to come here, and that's what I love. I think recruiting was asked a lot, too, because I believe in the last 7 days, Ohio State's had four commit. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about recruiting questions, he can't talk about kids directly until they've signed.
Mm-hmm.
So all he can talk about is broad strokes, which is, a little bit tough from time to time. Three things on a Tuesday coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right?
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
The Daily Ryan Day Show is brought to you locally by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers and by Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse on the Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
It's the Daily Show with Coach Ryan Day, brought to you by Safe Light Auto Glass. Jeremiah Smith with another big game, 10 catches, 130-plus yards, and a touchdown at Purdue. Even significant, Ryan, the fact that he drew so much double coverage because Carnell Tate wasn't playing.
Right, yeah. I think it was... We expected to have Carnell, so that was kind of something that happened like right before the game, right after warmups. But it was still great to get Jeremiah 10 catches and all the targets that he had, and him and Julian, and being able to get that done, because obviously he garners a lot of attention. But and he ran some good routes, had some really good catches, was strong. I thought he played probably his best game without the ball in his hands as well. So he's always got things to work on, we all do, but there's another big game for him.
Okay, we'll have another comment in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safe Light Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I Schedule at SafeLight.com. SafeLight Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
SafeLight Repair, SafeLight Replace.
Buckeye fans, choose chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged for a smoother finish. It's got that crisp, refreshing taste that makes those moments when you choose to rise above the noise and choose chill even better. Coors Light is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics, so crack one open and take a sip. Coors Light, choose chill. Celebrate responsibly. 2025 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Beer.
At Ohio State, we are the Never Afraid to Innovate teams and the Improve People's Lives teams. Together, we are the Ohio State University.
Ryan, we mentioned the fact that you went without Carnell Tate last weekend, but how big was it to have guys like Bryson Rogers and Mylon Graham step up in their roles?
Yeah, I thought Bryson played well. He graded out well, and Mylon had the early drop, but then came back in the second half, which is a good sign for a young player to come back and respond. And then I thought Max probably played his best game to date, just blocking, running, finishing, and then made some really nice catches. I thought the throw and catch on the back shoulder was really well done. We got him going early right after the first play got called back. We came back with the pump off the bubble screen and got Max going down the sideline. So I thought it was the most complete game to date, so that was good. And so we're going to need him to do that when guys go down. And so that's what it's all about. But good to see some young guys step up a receiver as well.
Yeah, this is the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
For over 37 years, Buckeye Nation has known Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse for serving the best steaks in the city. Our thick-cut, aged steaks are a staple in Columbus, with three locations in Upper Arlington, Dublin, and downtown. And just like the Buckeyes, we strive for excellence and an experience like no other. Hyde Park is proud to introduce the newly added wine room at our downtown Columbus location, where a new elegance in dining surrounds you, creating the ideal setting for any occasion or the perfect night out. Hyde Park is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. Go Bucks!
Around here, it's all or nothing. And Toyota has more all-wheel drive choices than anyone else, like the best-selling Toyota Camry. Now through December 1st, get 4.75 APR financing on remaining new 25 Camrys, or lease a new 26 Camry LE for $269 a month for 39 months with $3699 due at signing. With approved credit through TFS, tax, title, and license extra. Call 1-888-36-TOYOTA for details or go to toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
And I make this.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Chip and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
We'll read your emails on the air,
but we won't tell you where to send them.
Hey, we're not doing all the work for you. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, what do we have on the poll today, Reese?
Daily Fan Poll asks, when is the right time of the year to start listening to Christmas music? Your options are November 1st, Black Friday, December 1st, or never. 48% say Black Friday.
Well, who would say never?
The Grinch.
Like, come on. What are we doing?
I've had to unplug the Amazon thing a bunch. It's just a little, last week is a little too soon, but I'm getting there. I'm coming around. All right, time for three things on a Tuesday. Hit it, guys.
One, two.
Three things.
Sponsored by Buckeye Lake Marina, Central Ohio's largest selection of new and pre-owned boats. Find your next dream boat at BuckeyeLakeMarina.com.
Number one for me, our good buddy Dane Brugler put out his top 25 prospects updated for next year's NFL draft. He had Caden McDowell number 25, Carnell Tate number 10, Caleb Downs number 3, and the number one player in the 2026 NFL draft, Arvell Reese, is number 8. You want to talk about an ascent? And Dane even writes, it's not even close. He's number one, and it's not even close. What a rise for that kid.
And I think with the way NFL teams do their defenses, they just look at him and say, yeah, we'll put him wherever.
Maybe he'd be Micah.
It'd be terrifying. Yeah. First thing for me, a key matchup in the Mid-American Conference tonight. Ohio is at Western Michigan at 8 o'clock in Kalamazoo, which directional Michigan's always kind of fun because Ypsilanti, Kalamazoo.
They got good names.
Fun city names. But go Bobcats.
First thing for me, I mentioned yesterday that I have been dog sitting, and I've always said that I wasn't going to get a dog until I had a yard because I run so much that I'm not home as much and it wouldn't be able to have let the dog out enough, so I need them to have a yard to run in rather than the condo I have. Well, maybe that's not the only reason, because last night, right as the Blue Jackets' third period was starting, one of the dogs got up and started whining and wanted to go outside. And I'm like, really, dude, you couldn't have done this 10 minutes ago when we were in the middle of intermission? So I get up, I let the dog outside. I'm standing out there with him so he doesn't take off running and exploring anywhere. I come back in. I had missed the Connor McDavid goal. I didn't get to see it live. I had to see it in highlights. I was not happy with you, Barley, making me take you outside.
Welcome, brother.
Number two for me. So I don't know if this was on purpose. I hope that it was. So periodically I'll go up to the boys' rooms and just kind of see how they're doing on keeping things relatively clean. And I know one of my wife's biggest complaints is the fact that there's stunning inaccuracy when it comes to navigating the toilet when they go number one. And so I look into one of their rooms, no names please, but I look into one of their rooms and she took a poster that I bought for one of them at the Hoosiers gym that's Jimmy Chitwood saying, "I'll make it." And she put it over the toilet. If this was on purpose, this may be her apex. It may be the greatest thing she's ever done. It truly might be. I'm going to give her credit. I think that it was. It's a very good job out of her.
Second thing for me, and we're going to have time in the next couple of weeks. I don't think this is going anywhere anytime soon. LSU's trying to not pay Brian Kelly his buyout. Brian Kelly's claiming that they didn't actually tell him he was fired. And I think that the LSU job's the best available one in college football right now. Certainly talent-wise, exposure-wise, booster-wise. But man, the dysfunction there seems a little extra. Like, would Lane Kiffin want to go through all of that dysfunction? I mean, I guess if the money's right.
Who are you rooting for on that? Brian Kelly to get what is contractually obligated for them to pay him, or LSU for finding a loophole to get out of paying him what they're contractually obligated to paying him? And I ask this question because I think Brian Kelly is really dislikable. Which one? LSU or Kelly? Who are you rooting for?
I guess Kelly, because I want to see the governor have to... I mean, because this is coming from him.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least this scheme is coming from him. So
yeah, it's a scheme.
Rare, rare instance of me cheering on Brian Kelly.
I will say Brian Kelly may have something here because they said he showed up to the facility on Sunday and his key card didn't work. Nobody told him anything.
Of course he's going to win. He's going to win it. For sure.
Second thing for me, congratulations to Dublin Jerome Watterson and Worthington Christian. They all won boys state soccer championships here in the last couple of days. Dublin Jerome, their first state title ever in school history. So congratulations to them.
They beat Ignatius in the final, right?
They did. I think so. It went to penalty kicks.
That's a great job. Very, very good job out of them. Number three for me. So I don't know what one of the Showtime channels that I get on my old cable has been just running Godfather 1 and 2 on a loop every single day. And I have rewatched parts of it, parts of 1 and 2, probably 25 times in the last week. No, I mean, everybody knows that the two of the five best movies ever made, they hold up so well. That 13-year-old NBC last night ended up watching for like 20 minutes of Godfather 2 with me last night. He's like, "This is awesome." I'm like, "Yeah, it is. These are great. They are absolutely no notes." Like 50 years later, it's incredible.
Yeah, it feels like those are timeless.
They are.
Like
great.
50 years from now, will still hold up in terms of cinematic classics.
Yeah.
Third thing for me, I'm going to have to call an audible here because I noticed Baker, the congratulations that he gave, did not send a congratulations to the Upper Arlington girls soccer team. For the first time all time in the Division One state championship. It is. How dare you?
Bad job out of me.
But congratulations, Upper Arlington.
I'm always rooting for Justin Buttermore, though. Best coach in the state of Ohio.
Big game Friday.
Final thing for me, Rothman and Ice, they're coming up next. They'll do some Browns talk and probably a little Buckeyes with Tyvis Powell at 1:30, and then a lot of Buckeyes with Austin Ward at 2:30.
You have that to look forward to, which is nice. We're back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
An encyclopedic knowledge of sports and other random things you may or may not care about.
I think I found my mentor.
Rockman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FIRST.